For the week of December 7th, 2012, we talk about the Binding of Isaac remake, political issues in games, and whether or not loot is a good thing. Welcome to the Fourth Level. My name's Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
Ben always goes last, so Gary, you go.
I did not know.
Sorry.
Okay. This is Gary Butterfield.
Ben Merkel.
And you're listening to The Level. You heard all the rigmarole at the top. Guys, we're charting.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Like right now we're on New and Noteworthy. We were on the charts for a little bit. We're doing all right. So rats off to us all. David already knows all of that. So that's the good news that we're going to get up here at the top. I'm going to say this here just so everybody knows, like, now is the time, like, when we got to, like, blast those, like, rankings and stuff, like the, yes, like to stay up there. So if you're listening, do that. Even if you're not an iTunes person, I know whenever we talk about iTunes, it bugs people. I know from Twitter. but you know, if that's the kind of, if that's who you are, go ahead and do that, because that really helps us out.
Yeah, look, I know you've been stressing about what to get me for Christmas, and I completely understand. It's a big decision, but I think I'd like to just ask for a nice rating and a review.
Yeah, hey, it's 30 seconds of effort for a lifetime of joy. Those ratings stay up there forever.
Woohoo!
Congrats, guys.
Thank you.
You guys have a very nice review up there today. I was writing mine, just to throw in that plug. It took me less than 30 seconds. And you guys have another one by, another one that just popped up today. That's very, very nice and flattering. But if you guys haven't checked out, you should.
Cool. Good. Usually I'm obsessively checking it every time. Like, every time I feel my dopamine levels dropping, I just go in and I look at some kind of number, which is good, because there are lots of numbers in the world, A. as Sesame Street has taught me, and B, you know, the network in general is doing fine, doing very well. So, congrats to us all, and thank you to everybody. Time for the brief.
And Gary, I was going to say, Gary, now that you've done at least one episode with us, you can fully take credit for whatever ratings we get. Just claim that as all you.
I plan on it.
The Butterfield bump.
The Butterfield bump.
Oh, I like that.
Sounds pretty dirty.
Yeah, I was just about to say, is no one going to make that joke? Like, I was going to make it myself, and then it would be kind of creepy. I'd just show up on you guys' podcast and start throwing around the term Butterfield bump.
It's the dance sensation that's sweeping the nation. Time for the brief. Has anybody brought a news story for us? I do. Go.
I have one, since we were talking about songs and video games before. I have a nice one that kind of segues into that. I heard something from Beck that he posted on Facebook over the week that was mentioning his music and soundscapes, which I know, Dennis, I think you had played.
Sound Shapes?
I was going to say, yeah, that's the one. Yeah. You stole my story, Ben. Thank you.
Is this your story?
Yeah.
We might have different
but
stories.
Yes, go ahead.
But anyway, he was just encouraging people to vote on the VGAs, which have now been released, the Video Game Awards on Spike TV.
Yeah.
And so what I wanted to share is that you, the listener, can go and vote on whatever you think the best game of the year has been. There's a bunch of different categories as far as how they partition up by genre of what game or by platform. And they also have one of the categories is best song in a game. And the song that Beck was encouraging people to vote for was his song Cities in the game Sound Shapes. And so I know that you guys had talked about it before. I guess I did not know that Beck had did songs for it. So if you guys would have told me that, I would have probably listened to this a lot earlier.
I could swear that we did. Maybe
I just did not hear it. But yeah, so I listened to that song right away. It's amazing. And that game seems really awesome too. So I was very surprised by that.
There was a period of about like four episodes earlier this year on Stand Under the Don't Tree and Riddle Me This, the show's predecessor, where we talked about nothing but that.
Yeah, I can attest to that. I can tell you that you know this, Benjamin. Yeah. I listen to you listen to it.
But yeah, no. I saw a video of the level and everything, and yeah, it sounds amazing. The song is amazing, and the game looks really cool.
That genuinely, this is such a weird year for like picking, you know, like say, oh, the best game of the year. You know, and in a way, that's a really tepid, you know, conversation, because what does that really mean in a year where Walking Dead is out? but Soundshapes, I think that's leaving more of an impression on me as I'm starting to take the long view on the year, like in a way that something like Mass Effect 3, I thought would have, didn't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so this more than any year, you know, any year has been the year of like small experiences. If you can call Walking Dead small.
One thing I would like to mention too, for the Video Game Awards, their nominees for Best Game of the Year, two of them are independent, or, you know, it's Journey and the Walking Dead franchise. Smaller sized games. So perhaps it's either in credit to indie games and their development, or knocking AAA games and them not doing a lot this year. So. Hmm.
Well, you have to think, like, what do they say? For every one person who writes who writes a letter to a politician, there are like 1,000 people who feel the same way or something like that. Mm-hmm. For something as mainstream as the VGAs, that there's some kind of penetration of these smaller games into that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I guess that says something. Proportionally, there has to be some kind of other thing. It makes them gain a little bit more credibility for me. Although, I have to say that the most exciting thing about the VGAs year over year, more so than the celebrity guests, are the trailers for stuff that's going to be coming out.
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah,
I'm kind of hoping for like a Fallout 4 trailer or something like that when these mm-hmm. things happen. I don't know. I'm in a Fallout mood recently, but you know, for ops reasons.
Who would you want to make it? Bethesda or Obsidian? Yeah. Okay.
Bethesda. Obsidian.
Like, I mean, they won't do it. They're on the record saying they're not going to work with them again. And I will follow that franchise where it goes. But the I would much rather have an Obsidian created Fallout 4. I don't think it will happen.
Gary, perhaps later we can talk about Alpha Protocol, and I heard you were very into that game.
So. Yeah, I will go, you know, spill a lot of words defending Obsidian, and championing that company. So yeah, I would love to talk about Alpha Protocol. I actually recently replayed it, so
nice,
it's fresh in the mind.
Dennis, did you say that like the public can vote on this, like on the VGAs? Is that like a new thing recently? Or I'm sorry, Ben, rather.
Can
the public vote on the VGAs, or is there like a People's Choice category?
The public can vote on it. I don't know if that's how they determine the winner or not, but yeah, if you go to the website, you can vote away. So, yeah, I don't know how it's officially decided though. I don't know if it's People's Choice or not.
I know, like in the past, like they bring in game journalists.
A groundhog. Yeah. It's like choosing a pope.
Whatever game has the most Mountain Dew references.
Whatever color smoke comes off Punxsutawney Phil. So anywho, now Dennis, you said you had a story that was related to this.
Yeah. So Ben really took a left turn there to talk about VGAs. My story was that Soundshapes got a DLC pack.
Oh, you're today. Right.
Yeah. So they released one for free, which is a set of shapes to build levels with that I think are more curved, which had kind of been missing. You could do circles, triangles, or squares, and everything in the game had to be built out of one of those three. Or, you know, they had some special objects there too, but it was very rudimentary. So I guess they gave developers some new tools. They also released three music packs for 99 cents each. I think there was an acoustic one, a drum kit one, which there's a ton of percussion in there, so I don't know what extra went in. And then they also had a chiptunes set, which is kind of cool. I'm looking forward to seeing what comes out of that. And I think I've already played some levels. Because I dipped back in today, and I dipped back in previously. But today I played just because I knew there was new stuff out, and right. I think a couple of the levels had some of that stuff.
Yeah, like the Deadmau5 levels had a little bit of the chiptune stuff, but when I was trying to like compose things, like I made a test run and trying to make a theme song for DTR in Sound Shapes because that
but it never
really got where I wanted it to because I wanted it to it just it, they didn't have the sounds that I wanted that and I don't have patience. but they added that kind of stuff in outside of like the techno Deadmau5. Was that house music, dubstep? I'm not even sure.
That is dubstep, my friend.
That is dubstep? Okay.
Dubbest.
Just look for the wubs. That's how you'll know.
is that like a tribble? I don't...
There's a quote. I think it was something that Sean Elliott had on his Twitter that was, dubstep is the result of thousands of spoiled kids getting shitty Casios for their birthdays. And... it's more or less the case.
What is that? That's kind of like Freakonomics, that one chapter where they posited that the drop in violent crimes in the 90s was due to Roe v. Wade.
Yeah. Trends in music as done by statistics.
As done by Freakonomics.
There's got to be an addendum to Freakonomics where it's just a chapter that's just like, why Skrillex? And then everything that goes into explaining that particular bad haircut and that particular set of music.
There's no explanation for that haircut. He was in Wreck-It Ralph. Did you guys know?
Like physically?
Like, well, is a character modeled after him. Yeah, he did the music when they were in like the Bug World game, the shooter game.
See, that's appropriate, and, I think.
Yeah. And then he also, when they were having the party at Felix's house, he was the DJ.
Oh, no, I actually did notice that. Yeah. Yeah.
It was like, one shot, and I was like, what video game is it? Oh, I gotcha. So, yeah. Kind of cool. He also, branching off into another kind of weird news story, recently did a video game with someone.
Skrillex Quest.
Yeah, and
I'm not kidding. That's what it's called.
So do you remember anything about what you do in the game? I'm aware that it exists, and not much more than that.
You drop the beat. I don't.
Yeah. Yeah.
For about 40 minutes before you drop your bean, and then you drop the beat. No, I don't know. I didn't play it because it's Skrillex is featured heavily in it. you know, so it just. I'm not a big fan of that music, so I haven't checked it out. Apparently, it's like a faux RPG, though, isn't it? Like a retro EA UX RPG game.
So. I remember the art style being like that. Now I've got it in my head, though, that it's like one of those hold the button or don't shoot the puppy games, where you just have to hold the mouse button down as long as possible to avoid dropping the beat.
You get more points for how long you can not drop it.
Yeah. It just keeps on going up by half steps, you know.
It just modulates forever under a starless sky.
I don't know if you guys remember this, but the show that accompanied the Garfield and Friends,
U.S.
Garfield
Acres?
And Friends cartoon, or not? I'm sorry, not specifically U.S. Acres, but the theme song for Garfield and Friends does that for a long time at the end, like it's like Garfield and Friends, Garfield and Friends, Garfield and Friends. Garfield and Friends. It goes on for a long time. That beat doesn't drop.
They might have cut it. They might have cut it for syndication. This is apropos of our discussion on the Facebook group about how Nick at Night has ruined me. But the Mary Tyler Moore theme song, it ends with a little da 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 da, and like it should resolve itself into da da. And it doesn't, and it drives me fucking nuts. It's kind of like if I get Beethoven's Fur Elise in my head, it'll go da 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 da.
Yeah, that.
And it never goes da 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 da. Yeah.
I have a stuffed Super Mario Brothers turtle shell that when you press a button on it, it makes a stomping on a turtle noise. And if you keep pressing it, it keeps going up in the octave. And if you do it 9 times, you get a 1-up. And I oftentimes press it 8 times. and then just sit there and bask in the tension. it is a miserable feeling, but then I feel so good when I finally just, you know, go over the edge there.
Yeah, I think you showed that to me when I visited, and then I checked the stove and the locks on the front door.
Something's wrong.
Just to like ease it.
Anyone just popping into this conversation halfway through probably thinks we're talking about edging, which, like, don't Google that or anything, but that's totally what this sounds like. A bunch of bros just talking about edging.
I'm immediately going to Google that.
No, feel free for context, but it's, you know, it's gross. So, but this conversation could apply to that as well.
Is that when you have like a garden path that leads up to like mulch or bricks and you take the weed whacker to like get the weeds on the end?
Metaphorically, but really it's about withholding, full release from yourself while pleasuring yourself for as long as possible.
According to the Wikipedia, edging, a form of orgasm control. I think Prince wrote a song about that.
I think Prince wrote a lot of songs about it.
Yeah. like that was most of his output from 81 to 89 before he found Jehovah.
But anyone just popping in.
Known as peaking and surfing.
If anybody just dropped into the middle of that conversation, though, it's just, we're all just really excitedly talking about, like, and then I just keep like pushing it up and getting closer to the edge, and it feels so tense, and then it's so satisfying when I go over the edge. With just big dumb smiles on our faces, and so enthusiastically.
There have been so many seemingly innocent words ruined for me tonight.
Can't go surfing anymore, Dennis.
No. Surfing, edging, my lawn is going to get very unkempt.
Right.
Peaking, was that the other one?
Yeah.
Peaking is, I mean, that's...
Math is ruined for you.
Yeah.
Oh, man, speaking of dubstep, there's a lot of really good dubstep in the Breaking Bad soundtrack, but I feel dirty having it in my iTunes library. Like, you know, like, I'll listen to Fever Ray when I really, really want to feel depressed, but, you know, I wouldn't listen to it in public.
Dubstep, any kind of electronic music has that weird connotation where unless you're at a club, there's really no appropriate way to listen to it with other people.
Yeah, I'm more concerned with you there.
Yeah.
You sit there and you appreciate it. There's something about having lyrics, or I guess maybe more standard. I have no idea what it is, but you can't like appreciate a dubstep tune together objectively. It either needs to be like, you know, deep dark moments of your soul locked in your bedroom, or like at a freaking raver club and
driving. Driving angry.
Yeah,
driving. Yeah,
driving angry in 3D with Nick Cage. Yes.
God.
But
somewhere in here we were talking about sound shapes.
Yes, we were. So anywho, Deadmau5. No. Gary,
I've got a little piece of news now. Yeah, it's a part of a kind of a pet subject of mine, but just recently in the last couple of weeks, Edmund McMillan has announced the Binding of Isaac port remake project, where they're remaking the game for consoles and adding tons of new content and redoing the art style.
Yeah, they're down-resing it, right?
They're turning it. There were several of them that were up for vote, and I'm happy that the one I like won. It's aping A Link to the Past, they're stealing the aesthetics and kind of dungeon tiles, you know, some of the dungeon tile sets from A Link to the Past.
Huh. Awesome.
So yeah, the idea is that there's going to be an entire expansion's worth of new content added to the game, new characters, new levels, and then local co-op, which kind of breaks my heart because I really wanted to be able to play over Steam.
Yeah.
But couch co-op with that, and it's going to be released right now. You know, PC is on board, PSN is on board, Microsoft Live, whatever, you know, incarnation ends up taking, you know, or it's whatever's going on at the time. It seems likely, and he really would like to do it for Nintendo, and then iOS if he can figure out a way to make it not suck.
Like there are lots of like twin stick kind of shooters on that. I could see it being somewhat successful if he did it like Tilt to Live. Like
that's interesting.
Like give up the idea of doing any kind of dual stick control at all, and just make it accelerometer or gyroscope based. But man, so much of that. I love the idea that this is coming to consoles, or at the very least coming to computers in a version that is not limited by Flash. So you can actually like do dual stick, which is what that game so sorely needed.
I can't believe I left that out. That's the biggest part, is that it's being, you know, reprogrammed. The people who did Nicalis, the people who did the Cave Story and VVVVVVVV ports are doing it. So they're going to rebuild it in an actual programming language. So it's going to be a lot more stable, and there's going to be a lot more functionality to it.
And something that isn't Adobe Director.
Yes. Absolutely.
Because that game runs like balls, even on my like modern computer. It sucks. I mean, yeah, I like it a lot. It's a really good game. I would never talk bad about it, but yeah.
Yeah, and it's a big regret for him. I mean, it was something that he, if you watch, I know you guys talked about Indie Game the Movie recently, but I watched that recently. And he talks about, in that game, you know, you get to see the chronicle of Super Meat Boy getting huge. And then he more or less made The Binding of Isaac as a kind of a perverse response to that. Like, see me do something so anti-commercial, career suicide.
It was his in utero.
Yeah. or even his Neil Young's Trans. Like, it was even, you know, on paper, it is a tough pill to swallow, but it ended up being a huge hit.
Yeah. I love Trans. Trans is a really good album.
it's interesting. It's definitely, I love the balls of doing that, and the idea behind that. That's do you know the concept behind that album?
It was his son has some kind of palsy or autism.
Autism, yeah.
Yeah, and he figured out that he could speak to him using a vocoder. Yeah.
Right. It's like, yeah, it's that, and then the songs are about communication, and you know, it's a concept album about communicating with his autistic son. It's really interesting.
And it's only 36 seconds, so.
not autobiography, his officially sanctioned biography, Shaky, is actually really good, and they talk about that for a chapter or so. Mm. Yeah.
Nice.
How many?
It's interesting. Yeah, it's interesting that it's kind of like the, I'm trying to do something that will piss people off, and it's like, sorry, you're a golden boy now. You can do no wrong.
It's Wacky Deli.
The thing with Isaac is that I think that it just, the trap, he maybe overestimated how offensive or controversial the trappings would be. And I feel like the general kind of tone of people enjoy games have gotten a little bit friendlier towards that kind of like roguelike, unforgiving, really difficult, set of game design.
I'm going to piss everybody off. I'm going to make a really good game. I'll show them.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's it. And then the other thing, I mean, he talks about it. He did a big postmortem for Binding of Isaac as well.
I have that magazine. Do you want me to send that to you? I have a print copy of that.
Oh, that would be cool. Yeah, yeah, I like that guy quite a bit. But he did that, and he talks about give me one moment. Totally lost my train of thought. You telling me about the magazine totally tripped me up. Making a good game, being controversial. I might have lost it, dude.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay. I envy you for finding an edit point.
No, that is perfectly fine. I edit this for content very little, actually. So we're gonna roll with these punches. I'm excited about this, because for as much as I like Binding of Isaac, playing it with WASD and the arrow keys really bums me out.
Yeah, and you can make it work for a controller, but it's a pain in the ass.
Yeah, and I don't live with me on the Mac. I can't get a controller to plug into it. I mean, it's kind of like, man, I really wish that I could drive with this boot on my car.
Or a pair of boots on your hands.
Exactly. So.
Is the original art style still available for the console versions? Do you know?
That is unknown at this point, whether it's going to be something that can toggle on or off. Yeah. If I had it, it's mentioned, I think, in the first first rumblings of this. But I feel like at that time it maybe wasn't such a ground up remake, right. So I doubt it will be. So I think it's just going to be the 16-bit art style,
right?
But I couldn't be more psyched. Like, even if I can't do, you know, online multiplayer, anybody who is on the Watch Out for Fireball Steam group sees my, you know, play total on that game, and it's, you know, it's like 360 hours or something like that. It's the game I played the most in the world, which
this,
is really
this
weird.
Year, in for, 1 year.
Yeah, yeah. It was. That's what I took summer off of classes and played a lot of Isaac. And to be fair, you can't save in that game. So if I had to go to work or go to sleep, you know, you leave it running overnight.
Yeah.
But there's probably 300 legit hours into that game. So
wow,
insane insanity.
Neat. Yeah, I'd buy that for $10, you know.
And it would be a blast couch co-op. Like if I had real life friends as opposed to just internet friends, I would have so much fun playing it on, you know, on my couch. Yeah. So,
cool. Well, I will round us out with a story that is of interest to people who like good things. So there is a spiritual successor to Planescape Torment being made. Dennis, you brought this to my attention. And this news story is in regards to the idea that Chris Avalone, is that Avalone or Avalone?
I've only read it.
You've only read it. So let's say Avalone, because Avalone sounds like abalone, and I do not imagine him to be some kind of mollusk. So Chris Avalone has given his blessing to the to the lead designer of this new game that hasn't taken any kind of shape or form yet. This designer's name is Colin McComb. Who's talking about this, and he says, as you may recall, Chris Avalone mentioned his ideas for a spiritual successor to Torment and, with some frequency over the summer. This stemmed, at least in part, from discussions he and I were having about the possibility of resurrecting the IP, and this led to my reaching out to Wizards of the Coast, et cetera, on and on. He just goes on to say that, you know, even though Chris Avalone will not be involved in the project, he has said, yeah, go ahead. He doesn't know that it will use Planescape as a setting or D&D as a basis or anything like that. But this is a thing that could potentially happen three years out. So I'm happy about that.
Right on.
Yeah, do you know why Chris Avalone's not going to be working on it?
What's he working on now?
They I think
a bunch of Kickstarter
had a
shit.
Kickstarter, right?
Yeah. Project Eternity and Wasteland 2. Mm-hmm. He's involved in both of those pretty heavily.
Yeah.
So yeah, I like the, you know, Planescape Torment is one of my favorite games of all time, and I was really, you know, initially saw this headline and was ecstatic, but then when I read it, there are so many caveats to it that it's very little information. You know, it's essentially just someone is making a game inspired by, you know, Torment. Like it may not be the same system or setting or the same people at all.
Hey guys, do you like the movie Alien? Well,
watch Prometheus.
I met Ridley Scott at a party, and Ridley Scott said he wouldn't mind if I made a movie that I called a spiritual successor to Alien. You know, there's just not enough information. Like, I'll give it a fair shake. I don't, you know, it's not Avalone or bust for me, but it is, you know, I want to know more.
Yeah.
Before I get truly excited about it. But I'm always happy.
Let's put a timestamp on this. How many years until this comes out? I say 5.
I said 3 when I was being flippant. I think 3.
I have no idea, so I cannot make a prediction.
It's so hard.
$1.
$1. 3 years and $1. Damn you. No. Yeah. I don't know. It's so rare to see Planescape Torment in the news. There was a great essay done actually on Polygon about Fallout 2 recently. Just about like one person and their experience with that. You should check that out. I'm going to put that into the notes since we're talking about CRPGs. Also, the idea that Baldur's Gate Enhanced hasn't come out for the iPad yet. I'm really upset about that because, like, that was my weekend plan. Oh, well.
Yeah.
That's good.
That'd be
a
rad game on the iPad.
Yeah.
I do not have an iPad, but that would be a number one purchase for me.
Yeah, it's going to be like $20, so like they're edging into Square Enix territory, but what else am I buying?
It's a huge amount of content.
Yeah.
If you want, like that's a similar experience to that. Have you played, are you familiar at all with Abaddon, the Black Fortress?
I own that, actually. You know what? No, I don't. It's on some kind of list that I have somewhere. It's an OmniFocus or something like that.
A spiderweb software CRPG that was released for the iPad and Steam. That is you know, not the production values aren't as high as a Baldur's Gate, but it's similarly, you know, deep as far as, you know, like a late 90s, early 2000s CRPG. But with combat that is closer to it's turn-based and grid-based. So part of me almost wants to call it like a Final Fantasy Tactics, but it's less of a focus on that. Yeah. It's really good. I, you know, played a few hours of it and got stalled or distracted, but it's really good.
The grind. So now it's time for the grind. So we have to ask games. We play them. Who wants to volunteer to go first? I only have one, really. So I don't know if we want to put that in as a palate cleanser between longer entries in this.
Is it going to be the same one that I have?
I don't think so, unless you played something that I'm not aware I played.
Wait, I'm trying to deconstruct that sentence there, and I don't think it makes sense.
Defy you to diagram that sentence.
Why don't you... You can get it started, Cole, if you want.
Okay. Super Hexagon. It's a game that's by Terry Kavanagh, the guy who did the aforementioned VVVVVVVVV ad infinitum. Also, Don't Look Back, a game we've talked about at some length in the past. It's a game. They brought it out on Steam recently, and I bought it on Steam, but then I realized this would be a lot more fun on my iPhone/iPad. So then I bought it again on the iPhone. Nice. iPad. It's pretty neat. It's I hesitate to call it a puzzle game because it's more reflex based. At least on the level that I'm at, you have a hexagon at the center of the screen, and from each sector of the hexagon, so from the center point radiating out to the axes, or just the the vertexes. Sides. Rather, yes, the vertexes,
vertices,
you know, vertices. Yes, there we go. Thank you, Ben. That's why we have you.
I only correct grammar when it's math related. Other than that,
yes. But you are a little triangle hovering on the periphery of this hexagon, and there are walls that are extending or that are converging from the outside of the screen in, and you have to find the space in between them. So you rotate around using the left and right keys on the PC and by tapping the left and right side of the screen on any kind of touchscreen device, and it is really, really, really hard. The closest analog that I have is the speeder bike level from the Battletoads game on Game Boy, except you can't memorize it because it's randomized.
Does it look like it sounds like Tempest? Have you ever played like that old
Vectrex
game? Is that the graphic style? Like, what does it look like?
It looks shockingly similar to Tempest, actually, and it plays like that. I mean, you're rotating around a shape, and it's all straight lines, at least as far as I've gotten. But it's not like you're shooting the spiders that are crawling out of the web. It's seriously just trying to find the free space. And to give you like a perspective, in order to get past the first difficulty, which is hard, to the next difficulty, which is harder, you have to survive for 60 seconds. And in my, I would probably say 20 minutes, which is a long time for, you know, an iOS game, of playing, I've only survived, like, my high score is 37 seconds.
Wow.
Yeah.
So wait, does it accelerate within difficulty levels, or is it just like the same level of difficulty throughout?
Being that I've only played the first difficulty level, which is hard, both in name and also in, you know, just a qualitative statement, it is very difficult. I'm not qualified to say like what this evolves into.
Interesting.
I don't even know like if I can say that it's a fun experience, but
it's just a thing I've been doing.
It's neat. It's like if you went to a GameWorks in the early 2000s and they had the Uncle Fester's electrocution test game where you held on to the rods and it simulated electrocuting you by vibrating really, really quickly, and it gauged how long you could hold on. It's like if that was a game. Its only purpose is to incense you.
You're familiar with the PlayStation game Irritating Stick, right?
Yes, that is
sounds a little bit like Irritating Stick.
Yeah, and I've actually played one of those in real life. So imagine if Operation was a pipe that you had to move a ring around.
Oh, I've done that. It's like a carnival game.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of like that, except it's less about a steady hand and it's more about twitch reflexes.
Huh.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. So, I mean, for $3, you know, there are plenty of, like, dumber things that I've spent $3 on. It's neat, and I like supporting Terry Kavanaugh because, in general, I support the things that he does. It's just, it's one of those, it's humbling. Plain and simple, really.
Clear up for me, because was Terry Kavanaugh involved in Super Meat Boy in any way? Because I remember that.
No, it's a similar circle. I mean, you know, somebody who develops for Flash and has kind of extended into other platforms and gained a certain level of notoriety or, you know, praise or renown in the indie game circle.
Gotcha. Because I remember having played Don't Look Back and thinking that was really cool. And then for some reason I had it associated with Super Meat Boy and I was really excited to watch Indie Game. And not that I was, you know, excited afterwards, but I kept on looking for his name and it never showed up. So,
right.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. Okay.
Very cool. So that's really it. I mean, just it's been a slow week for games for me. I've got plenty of stuff that's like on deck, but, you know, life. Who's next?
I also only have one game, and it's not too long, so I wouldn't mind going.
Go.
My game is Assassin's Creed 3, or Ass Creed Trey, as it goes.
I love that. Who was it on our Facebook page corrected you?
Yeah, I know.
Was that Murph?
Made my day.
Maybe something like that.
It was on top of things.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so I think I'm probably a good halfway or over where I am in the game. I don't know when it'll end, I guess, so I don't know how far I am through the game.
That doesn't put it in a positive light. When will this end?
I'm lost somewhere in the middle of the game. Yeah. So it's definitely feeling like the middle of the game. The beginning of the game was awesome. You know, kind of opens you up to this whole new world. I'm having a little bit of issues with some of the different things of the games. So without spoiling anything, the one complaint I have of the game is a lot of the characters you kill tend to be morally schizophrenic, where what'll happen is you'll have a target you'll want to go and assassinate, and you'll kind of sneak up on him, and you'll see that he's doing something morally repulsive, like torturing somebody, or, I don't know, murdering children, or something like that. And so you're like, all right, I'm going to kill this guy. So then you go and you kill this guy, and then you have the Assassin's Creed thing where you have a conversation with him right after you kill them, which is always kind of weird.
Requiescat in pace, yes.
Yeah, and so what happens typically every time is he's like, hey, why'd you kill me? And you're like, well, you just did these horrible things. And he's like, oh, no, I was torturing Adolf Hitler. You shouldn't have killed me. I was doing something really awesome. And then you're like, oh, well, I kind of killed you, though, so I can't take that back. And then it just goes on from there. And you do that over and over again. So I'm kind of stuck in a loop of doing that over and over again. So that has been kind of annoying for me. Also, they kind of – it's kind of like you have to go to every point in American history. They don't let any of the story moments of the American history – get brushed aside, you know.
So like Forrest Gump.
Yeah, essentially, yeah.
Betsy Ross needs 5 cords of red cloth, or else the or else the colonies will never get together.
Yeah, it approaches that level. So,
oh man.
So sometimes that's kind of a bummer, just because it's like they kind of, you know, they created a really nice story with the first third of the game. But now it seems like I'm just doing a tour of my high school history class instead of continuing on with the story. So hopefully it'll perk up towards the end and, I don't know, turn into a better game.
Isn't that the dilemma that you always face in that kind of game, though, is you don't want to be on rails. Like, there's this – people will complain if you tell a very focused story all the way through.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me if I'm overstepping my bounds, but like – you kind of have to give them a place to open up and explore, because that's, you know, that's always something people are looking for in the games, is, I want to have all this additional content. So you've got to build it in a way that accommodates that, but at the same time, that comes at the expense of telling a very focused narrative.
There are two concepts that I want to invoke before anybody chimes in, because this is my show, damn it. No, the first is the Justin McElroy theory about game story, which is a game story is only as good as the stuff that it gives you to do next and how much it makes you want to do that thing next. You know,
okay.
There are exceptions to this, but, you know, a game story should serve to give you motivation or some kind of reason to go on to do the next thing. And that can be abused in, you know, Call of Duty or whatever, but it's a nice rule of thumb. The second is everything that you do for a game narrative and everything that you do to draw a person forward should be as transparent as possible, because otherwise people who don't like that, I personally like it when I can see the authorial hand, but people who don't like it, they will tend to, you know, reject it. So it's those ideas. How do you give somebody a compelling reason to do whatever's next without making it apparent that you're drawing them along a path or pulling the string?
Although, explain that second one a little more for me. So you're saying that
an example, Cole.
An authorial hand is a bad thing or a good thing?
Thinking about something. Oh no, I think it's a good thing. But there are people who are like, oh, this is on rails because I couldn't do anything at this point except X, right? So think about the first 3 hours of Final Fantasy VII, where you were just moving from encounter to encounter, or the first 60 or so hours of Final Fantasy XIII, where it was a corridor. And then compare that with something like, you know, Fallout, where people, even if they didn't treat it this way, or Fallout 3, rather, even if they didn't treat it this way, they like saying, like, oh, I could have gone and done anything I wanted to at this point. There are those two tastes, and there are those two things. And Assassin's Creed, as ostensibly an open world game, it's almost like they wanted to keep you on rails for the first part, and then I can only imagine that this story is going to resolve itself by putting on rails for the last part, but it's sagging in the middle because they wanted to pay lip service to that idea of letting you go around and do whatever you want. Grand Theft Auto style.
I don't think that's the issue for me personally. Like the way the format is, so like they'll drop you off at a point, your mission will be somewhere else in the world, and you can either walk there or you can fast travel there, which is, I think, kind of their way. You know, if you want to just play the story on rails, you can just fast travel everywhere you want to go. If you want to experience the world, you can. My issue is when you get to the mission is kind of hammed, and So right now in the middle, at least.
Yeah, at that point.
So they're not side quests.
Yeah, that just sounds like bad writing or bad design.
I mean, that's a crumple zone, right? Like, if this thing had encountered any kind of, you know, critical or, you know, impact, or somebody who was like, man, we should probably shorten this up, that was the stuff that would have been crumpled out or turned into DLC or something.
Yeah.
It's a car analogy.
Sorry. No beheadings. It's a car analogy, except Assassin's Creed still has the beheadings.
So it's kind of in a gray area right now. We'll see how it shakes out. But
I'm still excited to play it. Are the naval battles still fun?
I've only played the ones that they're few and far in between. They're kind of like side missions, so you can play them as often as you want. And I've kind of been going through the story missions. So I've played, I think two. One was an actual naval battle. One was technically a naval battle. You sail somewhere and then do something on land. But those were amazing. So that, yeah.
Two questions. Do they Saints Row the Third it and make it so that they introduce the concept in a main story and then you can do it however much you want in a side quest? And
yes.
B, when are they doing a whole game based on that?
Yeah.
When is who doing a whole game based on that?
Anybody, anytime. I'll leave you my phone number.
isn't that Puzzle Pirates? I know David has talked about Puzzle Pirates before, and the way he talked about it, he made it sound like it had some sort of naval combat aspect to it.
That's like Bejeweled with rum.
Which is how I always play Bejeweled.
Yeah.
But why are the gems gone?
Who keeps stealing my money? They're all against me.
Oh, man. Yeah, I've got it. It's sitting on my nightstand, actually. I have no idea why it's on my nightstand, because my Xbox is in the living room. But such is life.
Yeah. For me, I'm trying to get it done. I want to play some Hitman, so.
I want to, too.
A lot of open thoughts here.
Yeah.
A lot of open questions.
Did you guys hear about the Hitman, like, marketing fiasco?
Did we talk about that last week where they, like, sent out piano wire or something?
No. This is, so, we talked about something along those lines last week. Some sort of, like, send-out thing, but the new thing was they did a little Facebook game where you could contract a hit on one of your Facebook friends.
Oh, no.
The only problem was the way you did it was, like, pick out all these insults to throw at them, and then the hitman would contact you and tell you, like, I'm going to kill you because – and then you pick the insults. And, like, you know, one of them was, like, you have a small chest or a small crotch.
Oh, no.
And so it was basically like they deployed a cyberbullying tool. It was up for all of, yeah, it was up for all of like 3 hours, and then they took it down and like had to apologize to everyone just because, you know, it was so blatantly tone deaf.
Yeah, that seems surprisingly undignified for that game company too.
Does it?
Yeah, I was gonna say.
They typically tell a good story. They're typically very respectful with what they're doing, and they
Okay. This is the studio behind Kane and Lynch. Let me see here. No, I'm thinking of Acclaim, actually, is what I'm thinking of. I'm the people behind Turok. Let me see here. I want to look at the
Turok existed.
Yeah, I know, right? No, okay, so I'm thinking of Acclaim. Yeah, kind of, maybe. They did Deus Ex. Okay, they've got a certain level of cred. They also did Batman. All right, so it's becoming readily apparent that I'm thinking of the wrong thing.
Yeah, no, I think this is just a classic case of there is a quote unquote marketing department,
yeah,
of you know, people. It's the same people who drink nothing but Mountain Dew and eat nothing but Doritos, and we are seeing the kind of ideas that produces. They're probably, yeah. Essentially, yeah. I'm sure there's a subset of the target audience that thought that this, you know, advertising campaign was the coolest thing ever because they could insult all their internet friends because they've stopped being able to hang out with real life friends.
What was it? It was Ubisoft in Australia, their marketing team, as part of like a, you know, ARG, Violent Street Team Squadron, people. They had somebody pull a gun outside of a nightclub.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I
for Splinter
that.
Cell.
Oh, video games. That's terrible.
Yeah, that's right. Splinter Cell. I was trying to remember what story that was. Yeah.
Speaking of video games, since we're expressing disdain, I mentioned this on one of my myriad Facebook pages. There's a fantastic episode of a recent episode of Hypercritical, which is a podcast that is mostly dedicated toward Apple stuff on the 5x5 network, but occasionally they dip into stuff like this. The episode is mostly about misogyny in nerd culture, and it's a really good primer for why this shit needs to be knocked off.
Yeah.
So, you know, kind of in line with our discussion last week about the one reason why and the gender in games and stuff like that. Listen to it. It's the most recent episode as of this publication. It's called Blue Peter.
Oh, hey, sorry, a quick follow up to that. You know, a game that does a really good job with a strong female lead that's just like pitch perfect? Parasite Eve.
Oh,
yeah. I didn't think about that when we were approaching it, and I haven't started replaying it again for Fireballs, but
just I realized it halfway. I didn't even think about it when we brought up that topic, but I was playing it again earlier this week, And just, I was like, you know what? This is, she's, you know, real life. And there's nothing abnormal about her character build. She's dressed modestly. She has a, you know, deep storyline, you know, filled out character. Just, it's a, you know, it really struck me as, like I said, pitch perfect. So go figure. Awesome.
Replacing one form of bigotry for another, unexpected for a Japanese developer.
Yeah.
Well, so Square kind of has a history of doing pretty well with that, right? Like, you look at when the Final Fantasy games started having female protagonists, you know, they're complicated and not sex pots in any way.
Yeah, like with the occasional misstep like Tifa or, you know, something like
that. Yeah, Tifa, I guess, with the Tifa exception, Tifa is a real problem. but, you know, almost entirely other than Tifa.
Yeah.
You know, they traditionally do pretty well with that.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah. So, okay. Just random thought. Like I said, I don't want to talk about that game on this show because I'll have thoughts for it on WAF.
Well, it sounds like you volunteered to go next.
Sure. so yeah, I've played more. I've been playing so much. Parasite Eve. I dipped back into Sound Shapes. I finally published my first two levels. I think I had said. Yeah, I had said earlier that I wanted to do a series of four, and it's one of those things where I had really strong ideas for the first two, and then I know how the second two fit into the first two, but I don't really have a strong idea for them yet.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's a so, you know, and I was like, you know, why am I just sitting on these finished levels? So I put them out there. Go check them out.
What are the names of them?
The first one is The Creation of Man, and the second one is The Fall of Man.
Okay.
And it's kind of funny. So I published them a while back and kind of checked out the, you know, just to see how they were doing. Like you said, going and looking at numbers to make yourself feel better. And the first level had zero plays. And I was like, oh, man, nothing? Mm. And then I realized that the kind of a puzzle I had put in on the second screen that just to me, because I created it and, like, you know, I designed it, seemed really intuitive. If I took a step back, I realized that it was completely, like, non-intuitive, so I had to update the level with a little bit of a hint, and if you play it, it's less of a hint and more a tell you what to do, but it's kind of funny how you can get too close to something and it seems so obvious because I'd created it, but it really is really inscrutable.
Did you ever put out levels on Little Big Planet?
I did, I think, one level on the first Little Big Planet, which was just How Lucky Are You?
Mm-hmm.
And it was a series of like 50-50 gates. I think the first one didn't have a randomizer, so you had to do some weird thing about like having two identical buttons that were wired up in a way that would change every time. Or I think I had like a rotating platform and just a way to make it, you know, you weren't able to like memorize it. And you just jumped on the button and one button would kill you and the other button would open the gate. And it was just that repeated like 50 times. And each time it said the probability of you getting as far as you did. And then the other one I actually built.
It's Schrodinger's sack.
Yeah.
Yipes.
and then I actually did one for Little Big Planet 2 that I'm very proud of. That is a tic-tac-toe game.
Oh, cool. So did you develop the logic and stuff for that?
Yeah, I basically and I've never done anything programming before in my life. So I basically kind of learned the Little Big Planet system, which is, I'm sure, a very marketable career skill.
I was going to say, very applicable, yeah.
But it's all like, you know, and or gates and, you know, thinking through things logically, which it was a lot of fun to create.
You would be very successful at Minecraft. In fact, I would recommend that you put out some kind of Minecraft podcast so we can chart on this goddamn iTunes.
Yeah. So yeah, that's Sound Shapes. I went back and played. The community is really strong. There's a ton of great levels. Hopefully now mine included. I have, since I updated it, I now have, I think, 60 plays and 8 likes, which is, which is
nice. That is The Creation of Man and The Fall of Man. I would like for everybody who's listening to this who has access to this game to play it.
If you want to give me two Christmas presents. that's Sound Shapes I went back to. It's also, just because of PlayStation Plus, been like the week of the Brawler for me. Because there's so free, or at least last month, free through PlayStation Plus was Blood Rain Betrayal, Scott Pilgrim versus the World, the game, and Double Dragon Neon. And they're all like these kind of side scrolling brawlers. And it was, it kind of baffled me. I played Blood Rain Betrayal for like a level and was like, eh, you know, not really impressed. I played Scott Pilgrim for a couple levels. I actually did it co-op with Jen. We were both like, not impressed. Nothing that interesting there. And then I played Double Dragon Neon. I was like, this is awesome. It's great. I love it. And there's literally like the control schemes and everything are identical in the three of these games. So, like it's, you know, left stick to move and square to punch. And that's about all you need to know. Which maybe explains why maybe I just didn't get it for the first two. But really, they're very similar games, but for whatever reason, Double Dragon Neon just caught my attention. It was more fun. I think the kind of tone of it might have made the difference, and I think they kind of throw a few less enemies at you at a time, so it's more difficult enemies, but there tends to be less going on the screen at once, so it's a little easier to understand.
Yeah.
But it's
amazing,
you know,
soundtrack in Scott Pilgrim. I don't know if you played long enough to get a handle on that.
No, it's got
that's one of my favorite all time game soundtracks.
Is it the same soundtrack as the movie or?
No, but it's a totally new, you know, kind of chiptune retro soundtrack. The name of the gentleman who does it is escaping me.
Okay.
I could look that up, but yeah, it's separate. It's all instrumental.
Okay.
So. The one other story I have from Scott Pilgrim, like I said, I played it with Jen, and so you know your level up shops are literal shops, and like the name, they don't tell you what anything does. It's just a you know, a menu.
It's River City Ransom.
Yeah,
essentially, yeah.
Yeah, so I didn't know this was the way it worked. We just kind of jumped in and started playing. So we're like, you know, we're fighting all these people and we're mashing buttons, and then we accidentally go in this door, and it's a little coffee shop. And, you know, all the music stops and everything. We're just kind of standing there. And, you know, I was playing or she was playing Scott and I was playing whatever the love interest is. We're just kind of standing there in this coffee shop together and we're looking at the menu and it's like cafe mocha and venti latte and all this stuff. And I just kind of turned to her. I was like, you want anything? She's like, no, good for now. Well, let me get out of here. And sure, it was just like this weird, random little break in the action.
Yeah.
Where we went and thought about getting coffee. So,
That's
cool. And there's so much to recommend the game. Like the 8-bit style is great. The soundtrack is great. It's got some of the ideas. Like the second one, second level, you fight your way through a movie set, which just it has a lot of interesting ideas. It never caught for me for whatever reason.
You ever played Castle Crashers, Dennis?
No,
I actually was going to bring that up. That's one of my been playing.
I've heard it's good. Yeah. So maybe I'll have to check that out. That was available through PlayStation Plus a while ago, but I don't think I was a member at the time to download it. So
So you've been a member of this PlayStation Plus thing for a couple of weeks now. Would you say it's worth diving into?
Oh God, yeah. So I've downloaded I think 10 of 12 games, and the two that I didn't download were just because I already own them on disc, and I've got those games forever now, as long as I'm a member.
Right.
And that includes Payday the Heist, full-fledged game. That includes Infamous 2, full-fledged game. And they just released what the PlayStation Plus free games for December were, at least in Europe. I haven't seen for U.S., but I imagine it's the same. Batman Arkham City.
What?
Nice.
As well as another one is Limbo.
Yeah, yeah.
And there was another, I'm forgetting it now, but like, holy crap, what a roster. I think Bioshock 2, which I haven't played.
Huh. That's a good one too, yeah.
So like, wow, completely worth it.
Huh.
For $5 a month, I'm already, if you just count the blockbuster titles, I've probably gotten $150 worth of blockbuster games.
Yeah, I'm probably going to have to cave, man. That's, wow.
Let me know. We'll play some Little Big Planet 2 together.
That was the initial draw when they started putting out full PS3 titles. That was a cheap and quote in the short run way to play a Little Big Planet 2 without buying the whole thing.
I've been looking for an excuse to go back to it, and I think there are two reasons. One would be to do the co-op stuff, because there's a lot of every level has co-op only areas where you can only do it with co-op. But just in general, you know, random platformers with people online is not a good experience, so I've avoided that. And then also, I've always been curious if I, because you can go into creation at the same time and like create a level with someone else, and I always thought that would be a cool thing, at least to try. So
we had a lot of fun on that one day that we that we played it at your old apartment by campus. So I can understand the appeal. On the other hand, I'm not a good person to count on for anything. So it'd be like, I'll buy this and play it online with you. And then I never, like, I'll be dodging your calls and shit.
It's all fuck. You do a podcast with me every week. You can't avoid. Oh, speaking of Borderlands 2, I'm,
you're doing the no shield run, right?
Yeah. I'm a good amount of the way into it. It's not as hard as I expected it to be. I definitely have to be more careful. But I've got, you know, badass perks, built up from my first playthrough, and, I've got, you know, like a health regeneration skill tree that, that keeps me, you know, keeps me healthy.
Mm-hmm.
So that's all working in my favor. The one interesting thing is that I'm just going through the main story quests. So, you know, kind of harkening back to our discussion earlier about being able to just plow straight through a game versus, you know, sniffing the roses. I've been focusing on the story quest, but what that's done is it's got me to a place where I could probably do it just fine if I was using a shield, but because I'm not, I almost have to do some of the side quests just to grind and get myself leveled up enough to be able to go through the main ones.
Yeah.
But I'm just getting to like level 13, 13, 14. And, that's just now becoming an issue. And even then, it hasn't been a blatant issue. I've been able to get through most of it pretty well. So, but it's still incredibly fun to play, and you know I'm feeling challenged, so that's good.
Nice.
Maybe I should have played as Zero for this run, because his whole thing is he's just looking for a challenge.
It's an RP server, so you need to role play it.
You know what? I want to dip back into something, because I want to make an announcement to like-minded folks on the podcast. This is going to distract from your Borderlands conversation, Dennis. I am so sorry, but apparently, Sony maintains a server for EverQuest that is frozen in time in late 2002, which was my heyday of playing this game.
Wow.
So it's free to play. It works on Mac, and it's all of the expansions up to Planes of Power, which it's like I found a monkey's paw but tricked it.
What it is, Cole, I almost told you about that, but what it is it's like a Harlan Ellison short story where you're going to start playing that and then you're going to be trapped in this, you know, this is specifically a trap designed to digitally, you know, capture you and stop you from,
like, Tron,
you know, eating. Yeah, it's going to be like I have no mouth and I can't scream.
Gary,
100%.
If you took every microangstrom of the world of Norath and wrote the words "I hate Cole" on it, it would not come anywhere close to expressing Sony Online Entertainment's disdain for me. So to punctuate that, I am playing a human druid on that server named Furley. Yes, it is named after Mr. Furley from Three's Company.
I was gonna go for Ermagerd Curse Furley, but
yeah. Chris Farley is a funny dude. So anyway, yeah, Borderlands 2. Man, you're like, yeah. I need to like become like the Hotline Miami guy. Who just like straps a bomb to you and then sends you like a voicemail saying, "You must Iron Man Borderlands 2. If you die, if you die in the game, you die in real life." just to see how devoted you are to challenge runs.
Yeah, I'll feel alive. But I'll save anything else on Borderlands because I'm sure it'll come up.
Hurt me more,
snake.
Yeah, Borderlands 2 is going to come up later. That's a sneak preview to 20 minutes in the future. But
so final thing for me, and I know I've got like I said, I've got a million games now due to this new membership thing. But I've been playing King of Fighters 13.
Okay.
And it's a fighting game in the vein of like Street Fighter 2. You know, everything's on a 2D plane, slightly pixelated character style and all that. It's really good. I think it's more simple than other fighting games, and that the move list isn't, you know, 3,000 pages long for each character. Right. So I think it's more about playing the opponent and kind of knowing what your character can do and plotting that out. But it that's all beside the point. I am stupidly, monumentally, historically, epically horrible at fighting games.
Is anybody here good at fighting games?
Nope.
Like I used to be back in the day, like the Street Fighter 2 era, I could hold my own. And then at some point it became all about like cancels and interrupts and frame counts.
Right.
Yeah.
And that stuff is an alchemy that I cannot understand. Like that is like showing you know, a ray gun to a caveman.
Like
he's only gonna hurt himself.
I was really, really good at Street Fighter 2 in my grandparents' RV camp like clubhouse, you know, like next to the 1942 machine and the pool table, you know, and the counter where you rented the paddle boats. But after that, like I done fall off. So like I think that each of us here can empathize with you, Dennis.
Yeah. So it's a language I don't understand, but at the same time I'm just drawn to, like a moth to the flame. I really enjoy playing fighting games, even though I'm terrible at them. Which is weird.
Isn't the kind of the how good that game those games are or how much fun they are scales with your competition, right? So if you're playing a fighting game versus somebody who is similarly skilled, then it's a blast. Yeah. And it doesn't matter that you suck, you know.
Yeah.
But those games really engender kind of competitive gaming and you know real serious play. You know, I have friends who do like a fight night every Saturday, and they play Marvel versus Capcom and Street Fighter 4, and they've invited me to go to it. And I'm like, fuck you. Like, are you on your minds? Like, you guys do this as a profession. Like, I'm not like, oh, I'm going to do that, and then I'm going to go play Counter-Strike with people online. Yeah, right. You know, because yeah, I'm going to go play some StarCraft against, you know, the nation of Korea. Like, that's what I want to do. So the it's interesting because those games have that kind of scalability. So as long as you're playing with somebody who is not, you know, has the same skill level, it's amazing. It's like it's an experience you can't get anywhere else. And then the second there's that imbalance, it becomes, you know, frustrating. You know, to be able to consistently lose at fighting games and still have fun is a skill that I've never picked up.
Yeah.
Well, what I found is that there is like an inverse bell curve to it, where if you're playing in, by the way, online, no amateurs play online. I was the only one. There were two other people who were probably about the same skill level as I, and that made up my two wins out of 50.
Yeah, there was there was that Penny Arcade that made light of sexual assault that makes a very good point of that.
I think
you kind of buried the lead on that one, Cole.
What's that?
Like, is the point of that Penny Arcade made light of sexual assault, or they made fun of fighting games?
They put out like in 2003 this comic that was like it was an animated GIF of somebody looking for a Warcraft 3 server. Except that like the message is like, oh, we're reticulating splines, et cetera, was like joining Warcraft 3 servers, connecting to Battle.net, looking for a group of people to R-word you.
Ah, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wish that anybody who played video games could never say that again.
Yeah.
Like unless it's in real life, like you should never refer to that as something that it isn't, unless it's the act of rape, like never say rape. Never. Nothing is rape.
Nope. Except,
you know,
this is the one time in history, and I can't believe I'm saying this, that Dane Cook has done anything worthwhile. It's in his
how soon we forget about Mystery Men.
But he, you know, after he got completely huge, he did something called Isolated Incident, where it was just like a really small different thing for him. His version of Binding of Isaac, or what was the other one that we were talking about earlier? The album name?
a trance.
Oh, trance.
Yeah, yeah. It's, but he, you know, he has a, it's less of a bit and more a rant in there about how people abuse that word. And he's like, you know, oh yeah, because the last time, you know, someone was describing what happened to the cops, they said it was like I was playing a first person shooter against them and I wasn't doing very well.
Yeah, that's astute. Yeah. That's one of the things that's like upsetting. Like, so at the Something Awful video game threads, constant insistence, I'm going back and playing, listening to Idle Thumbs, which is a video game podcast done by initially some people who wrote for Gamma Sutra, and then they all went on to work at video game publishers, et cetera, et cetera. Hmm. Developers. It's pretty good, except it's like, you know, it ran initially from like 2008 to like late 2009, and that was before, and this is something, okay this is getting like way inside baseball, so I am so sorry, like one of the big things that that Rebel FM has done, like, you know, aside from being on the high side of mediocre, has been to like shame people for saying rape and retard, the twin R words of like, you know, awfulness, like saying like, you know, maybe let's cut back on that as like, if not like a people, at least as like podcast. So it's jarring to go back and hear them use those words.
Yeah.
I'm not for like self censorship or whatever. Just listen to TDRK or those Dem Ross kids. But you know, there's such a thing as, you know, unacceptable targets, and I think that those are things that you shouldn't go after.
The issue is, and it seems like it shouldn't even need to be stated out loud, but is that nothing that can ever happen in a video game could ever, you know, approach a modicum of. Yeah. Of what that is, you know. So it's not even saying it has similar qualities. Like, it's just, it's an inappropriate overlapping context, you know. And it's and when you talk about even just humor in general, like, so the idea, you know, a big thing in like when you deconstruct humor, which is a terrible idea, but the idea is it's about compatible overlapping contexts, you know. Like, my doctor told me that if I eat well, you know, run every day and quit smoking, I'll be dead in a week. You know, like, it's things that it's one part only kind of matching the second part. And that's what, you know, jokes are. Mm-hmm. And this is an example of the ultimate, like, inappropriate, non-matching, non-overlapping contexts. Like, video games, and I think video games can be important. Art can be important. You know, I think video games are art. I have no problem getting on that side of the fence, but... You know, not for rape, and not for just like losing in a game or somebody getting, you know, it's not even like a video game where somebody is actually raped is better to me than someone saying, you know, we really got raped in that, you know, that scrimmage in Dota, you know, like, at least one is an expression and it's narrative and it's defensible under the idea of art. The other one is just somebody with, you know, kind of a dumb use of language.
Yeah.
And just like insensitive, like shitty use of language and just overused, you know, get a thesaurus, you know. Yeah. Like, the problem when you start hearing that, it's everywhere.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, it's the one word that people, it's a lazy word, honestly.
Yeah.
And the weird thing, I think just video games as a whole, just as an art form, as you mentioned, they're just, it's this weird adolescent stage where I almost think it's not ready to take that on. Because if you think about the Tomb Raider, the demo from E3. Do you guys remember that?
Yeah.
The whole controversy. I mean, there was a just one little part that had this overtone of sexual assault to it. And if you go back and watch it, it was actually handled in a very mature way. And mature not meaning like blood and guts, but mature as in, you know, respectable seems like the wrong word. But, you know, like, handled well. Yeah. It fit with the situation. It wasn't gratuitous. It tasteful. Built the character. As tasteful as that sort of thing can be. Yeah. But I mean, everyone just immediately flared up about it, backed away from it. And it almost seemed like it was like, Hey, we're not there yet, which is weird.
Yeah.
But yeah. So, go ahead.
That's what I was going to ask you is, I don't think it's a subject that's ever been really depicted seriously in a video game, or at least not to my knowledge.
For some reason, I keep thinking back to Silent Hill 2, where like that, you know, definitively happens. It's a totally different context.
Oh,
it's
not,
you know, part of the narrative.
Yeah,
and
it's
played for an entirely different emotion, but it unequivocally happens.
Yeah,
yeah.
With, Pyramid Head.
I'd forgotten about that. And the character with the knife, is it Annie or?
Yeah.
Is that her name?
Angela. She with her dad. Yeah.
Yeah, and the room that you see her in
with the pistons and stuff. Yeah, and the flesh walls. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's I would rankle it saying that the medium can't handle it just because it hasn't been done so much. I mean, you look at games that handle, more games or subjects with similar amounts of gravitas, right? Like something like a Dear Esther or something where there are all these overtones of euthanasia and suicide. And I mean, depending on your interpretation, but,
or depending on the narrative that you got in the roll of the dice. Yeah.
It was just the first example that came to mind, but I mean, there are lots of games that deal with that kind of, similar issue. So I feel like it's possible. It may not have been done yet, but it needs to be treated with like a kind of respect, in a way that, when I was playing Binding of Isaac, I played Fear 3 too, and I don't know if any of you guys played that, but it was this weird like month where I was in my mother's vagina in video games nonstop. Like I was just constantly Freudian adventuring in my mother's vagina. And that you could argue that, but it's different. It's less, I don't know. Like it's hard to say that yes, this one thing is okay to take lightly and do with cartoony graphics and everything, and this other thing is not. But even then, like where that's graphics, it's not just somebody overusing the word to mean dying in a video game, which is really my big problem with it.
Hmm. Yeah. And I think it speaks to, we talk about the dadding of games and just the overall maturation of the video game audience, to where it's almost like rape is simultaneously overused in the wrong way, and people are uncomfortable with it when it does show up in a serious context, because the demographic up until this point, I would say, has been primarily this kind of teen male. It's probably very uncomfortable with that idea overall, just in general,
with any kind of sexuality, aside from blatant objectification.
Yeah.
What I would say as like a counterpoint to this all, and like me being Debbie Downer perspective, but it's like, we treat that as a huge taboo as it should be, but murder, a-okay.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. There's something weird there that one is infinitely, not infinitely, but so much deeper, so much more taboo than the other. It's yeah.
Yeah.
That's a subject for a deeper time, man.
So King of Fighters.
I just wanted to talk about my fighting game.
I'm not, a gender studies major or anything. I can't actually unpack that, but there are differences there, right? So like you look at something like murder, and murder is justifiable. Murder can be done. It happens in war all the time. Like our country is dropping bombs on brown people right now. Like it happens. Like it just that's sadly, something yes. I mean, it's sad, it's not right, but it's not, it's a justifiable, and a lot of games where you're murdering, like not all of them, but a lot of them kind of take on those trappings, right? So like you're fighting a war of some kind, whether it's a war in the future in space or a war now, not always the case, like sometimes, or it's so cartoonish and then it becomes like a genre, it starts belonging to the genre, where that's, people are going to die in that. But there's definitely a difference between, like, rape is never justified. It's not something that, is ever okay. Like, and I think that's a big difference with that. Like, I would not disagree with you that murder is, like, the times where games have made me feel like murder is a big deal are some of my favorite in gaming.
Right.
And that's really hard to do. And most games take the opposite tact. But the, I already feel like rape is a big deal. Like, that's, I need nothing to tell me that. I mean, they're definitely different. So I'm not totally refuting your point, but there is a difference there.
Yeah, I really just said that as a way to quash conversation because we've been dwelling on it for a while.
To wrap, I think I remember where this point started, which was there's an inverse bell curve. So if you're back to the fighting game, if you're online with someone who is the same skill level as you, a ton of fun. Then you get to that like bottom middle part where it's like, okay, this person is just spamming fireballs, but I haven't learned how to jump yet, so there's nothing I can do.
Right.
And that's infuriating. Then they start to generally employ skill to defeat you, and that's that's just makes you feel helpless. Then I had two matches where I got put up. They give players rankings, and I had two matches where I was up against players who were the highest possible skill ranking. And it crossed over. It went from me feeling helpless to like me watching a work of art.
Yeah.
Just seeing these people systematically destroy my character was just amazing. The second time it happened, I almost thought like, oh great, I got matched against this person. And in general, the matchmaking is bad. Partially because, like I said, there's not a lot of amateurs on there. But, you know, I was like, you know, I should just not touch the controllers, just get through the match as quickly as possible, let him do his thing. I was like, no, you know what? It'll be more interesting if I try. And it was my legitimate best being torn apart in a million different ways. So it was almost an interesting, you know, it hit that other side of the bell curve where it's like, wow, someone can actually do that. That's impressive.
So this goes to one like I guess two things. I'm sorry to name a list before I say it, but it's about like if you're stuck on a boss, like two things you can do. One is to turn off the sound because it's designed to psych you out. Unless there are audio cues to like, oh, they're shooting a fireball at me, I should probably watch out.
Fireballs.
Yeah, you know. That's what I was doing yesterday. Yeah. No, but like the music is, you know, it's supposed to like psych you out. In reality, it's not as hard as it would be if you were just playing it in silence and, you know, watching for visual cues. It's kind of the opposite of putting on a blindfold to fight somebody in martial arts. Second off, you need to watch a YouTube video of somebody doing this, and I did this so many times in Dark Souls, actually. Just to like prove to yourself mentally that it's possible. It's a way of visualizing without using your imagination. And there's a lot of value in in getting your ass kicked by somebody who's better than you, right?
Yeah.
Because like you can say like, oh, here's that thing. You know, it's kind of like getting into an argument with somebody who's like way smarter or more knowledgeable than you on a subject, you know? It's kind of like Gary said, you know, you're only as fun as your competition in those games. And sometimes you wouldn't want it to be all the time because you would just take your ball and go home. But, you know, you can have some fun if you're outclassed, right?
Yeah, it's good to be reminded how just it's always cool to see talent at work.
Yeah.
You can have fun, and you can also, if your goal is to get better at the game, it's a shortcut to that. And you need that in order to get better at the game. So it depends on where you're deriving your fun. You know, whether it's just this arcadey kind of experience and you like the tension of will I win or won't I win, or is the fun in personal advancement and this is a skill I want to develop and, you know, I want to learn tricks. I want to learn from this.
Yeah, it was, my heart was racing after my first online match. There was like, and you know, that's never the case when I go play a first person shooter online. There's something about that individual conflict that is really exciting. My personal motivation though was there was a trophy for playing 50 online matches. So, I don't know if there's anything else to say about the game. If you're into fighting games, I mean, I guess I can recommend it. Like I said, I've got this weird relationship with that kind of game. But yeah, that's what I've been playing.
Cool. Gary.
Yeah. So the game I've been playing the most, I feel like you guys are probably already pretty sick of, from Cole, but, I got turned on to Dark Souls. So for the last, you know, month or so, I have just been mainlining that game.
I got stronger.
Oh, I love it. I absolutely adore it. Like it is, I hit a stride in that game and it felt better than it's felt in a really long time in a video game. It's the kind of game I think, and again, I won't talk about too much because I'm sure Cole has already said all of these things, but it makes me realize what's wrong with other video games. So when something is sloppy or poorly designed or unnecessary or anything like that, it stands out, you know, like a sore thumb, because there's, and even within Dark Souls, there's only a few things I think are missteps, but they stand out in stark contrast because everything is so, so well done. I had a great experience in it where like one of my friends was telling me about the game. So it wasn't just Cole who was trying to get me into this. A lot of my friends were into it. And he said, you know, don't try to break it because it will break you. And I was, without doing too much in the way of like, how much have you gotten into like spoilers in this, Cole?
Vaguely, I would say anything after Anne Orlando would be considered verboten.
Okay. So this is add-on in Orlando. So I was working towards upgrading one of my weapons and, you know, farming souls and going back and forth between a blacksmith that's in Orlando to get a very powerful weapon that you get. And I had gotten all of the currency I needed for it. And I was like, okay, rather than step-by-step making my way through these mooks and getting to the blacksmith, I'm just going to run for it because I just want to get this new thing and try it out. And I did so. And they had followed me into the room with the blacksmith. And in fighting them off, I angered the blacksmith and aggroed him, which meant that all of this money I had been saving. So I got sloppy, and all this money I'd saved up, I then needed to go spend on absolution to make the blacksmith forgive me and start over. Like, it's just very elegant the way it stops you from playing badly. You know, and it's just really impressive. It reminds me of something, and not on the same level because this would be hyperbole, but in the same way that like Arrested Development or The Wire makes me feel dumb to watch it, like this makes me, like when I see the strings in this game, it's just like, wow, I can't, you know, that's so good. That's such a good way to do this. I wish more video games were like this.
So even when things go wrong, you're like, well, I probably deserve that.
The two areas where I feel like, and I've talked about them a lot on the Watch Out for Fireballs Facebook page, where I feel like I've actually run into design flaws are the only times I felt like I've died and it wasn't my fault. I seem to be having terrible luck with invasions. So if I'm human, I get invaded. And it is people who are, they're called twinks, is the online terminology, which is probably, you know, an offensive term, but that's what they're called. And it's people who keep themselves purposely, you know, lower middle level, but get kind of end game equipment so they can stomp people like me. But all I'm trying to do is get through Blight Town, man. And,
just minding my own business.
Yeah, just want my kids back.
that's very frustrating. But I love that game. And again, like I'm sure Cole's recommended a whole lot. On what you had said, I am also have been playing Castle Crashers that came out on Steam. Nice. And I have an online buddy who I play games with. So we have been working our way through that. And that's an interesting game. Like he mentioned it. He said it was possibly what he called like the Halo effect, which I would also call like the GoldenEye effect, where a game is kind of the first to get popular to do something that hasn't been done in a while or in a different medium. Right. And gets kind of undue credit for it. So, you know, GoldenEye isn't a great game. You know, it's like there were PC shooters that do the same thing and better at the same time. You know, like came out around the same time as like Quake 2.
Yeah.
And that's a way better game. But it was on a Nintendo 64, so a lot of people got it.
Yeah.
And he was wondering whether this was just kind of like, oh, this is the first, like, you know, people are bringing back Final Fight. People are bringing back Double Dragon. Like, and it got a lot of credit based on that. And there are definitely some problems with it, but for the most part, I think it's pretty fun. I'm glad that came out online.
In the 4 years since it came out, has it worked out the bugs? Like, I remember there was a lot of like checkpointing issues, things like that. Well, I guess that's the one major bug that I can remember, or at least bad design. Like, is the checkpointing barbaric? Because I cannot tolerate that.
No, I have not run into any problems with that. So the it's all been fair. So. Yeah.
Is the Ice Knight still the best?
I'm playing as the Ice Knight. It was just a random choice. And he rules. I'm doing a magic build on him. I'm very proud of my little guy.
Yeah.
It's working out well. I wish I had a more complicated vocabulary of things to do. So, yeah. I really liked Scott Pilgrim when I played it. And one of the things that I like about it is it's got a lot of depth. Like there's a lot of different moves you can learn. There's a lot of different power-ups. And it makes it a little bit less kind of arcade Twitch fun. And the game is really, really hard.
Yeah.
This is a lot easier, but there's not that much I can do. I just kind of spam my magic attacks and, punch, 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 which is fine. Like that's great. It's fun. But I do wish I had a few more things I could do.
Yeah. More verbs to use the most, that's the most offensive language possible.
there's almost a level of simplicity that you have to have, because what I understand is the game is just great to play with friends, right? And did you say that's how you're doing it?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And, you know, part of that is that people can just drop in and play and you can have a great time. It's almost like a party game, is what I've heard. that you can just kind of pick it up and play it and have a great time. And you almost need to sacrifice some depth to make people feel like they can be badasses, you know, with little to no experience for the game.
Yep, I definitely agree. I think that there's probably a kind of a spectrum there, though, and I just wish it was a smidge more, you know, complicated. Like, it doesn't need to be, you know, like Dark Souls complicated. Yeah. But I just would like, you know, because the game will naturally have a ramp up, right? So if your characters are leveling up, you start off with just punch, punch, kick, and your basic magic attack, and that's fine. And by the time it's self-selecting the group, so as you play longer, you are prepared for more complexity. You know, yeah, they have a level up system in place for that, and it doesn't take enough advantage of that, I think. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that by the time you're going to run into people who are turned off, they could make the elements that would turn off casual players not appear until you are no longer a casual player.
Right.
Gotcha.
You nice. Know?
Yeah, that would so work.
That's what I would ideally choose for that game. And then kind of just like finally, so, and this is something I just recently made the decision to give up on, you know, which would probably be, I'm sure you guys have talked about that on a Don't Tree Riddle before, you know, just like the times you've given up on a game. But I think I'm done with Costume Quest. Have any of you guys put any time into that or checked it out?
No. Mm-mm. I haven't checked out many of the latter day Double Fine things beyond Brutal Legends.
It's I started playing around Halloween because it seemed appropriate.
Yeah.
And it is I'm kind of moving towards this decision that Double Fine kind of makes bad games, and it's killing me inside.
Oh no.
It's so charming. It's so charming, but it's not a very good game. Like it's the way that like Final Fantasy Mystic Quest was supposed to be baby's first RPG. Like this is baby's first JRPG. Like right. It is, there is nothing going on under the hood. Like it is, there's almost no mechanics in it. Like it's so tap A to win fights and real charming, like lots of fun writing, but there's just tons of random encounters you have to tap through and it's not fun to do at all.
That sucks.
Made for kids, right?
It was made. It was definitely kind of made for kids, but it has like adult humor in it. You know, not like adult humor like Eddie Murphy's Raw, but adult humor like you know, sophisticated humor. But I kind of feel like that. You know, Brutal Legend. I don't think very many people go to bat as saying that's a great game. And then like Psychonauts, I get really frustrated with too. Like I think Psychonauts becomes a serviceable 3D platformer at best, like gameplay. If you stripped away all of the personality and writing,
right,
no one would want to play it.
Mm-hmm.
It's sub Banjo Kazooie.
Yeah, you like I hated Psychonauts. So
I want to love it so much.
So Garrett, then how do you feel about Alpha Protocol then? Because if you strip down the writing of the game, it's hard, you know, the mechanics are like PlayStation 1, you know?
I don't know if I necessarily agree with that. I would say that the one of the things that is that there's an intersection in the writing and mechanics of that game that isn't, you know, so the line is a little blurrier there. Mm-hmm. The way that the way that you interact with characters and the way you approach missions has a lot of mechanical changes. Mm-hmm. So you couldn't erase the writing and still have the mechanics be the same. And then depending on how you, so I with full disclosure, I played through that game twice and I played it the same way twice because I just, I naturally gravitate towards certain kind of play styles. The mechanics.
Was it professional both times?
It was as a pistol based, stealth character.
Okay.
So, and the pistol, skill tree, allows you to kind of do a VATS style move with some frequency.
Yeah, it has a slowdown perk.
Yeah, slowdown and stop. Like, you can actually stop everything and aim and kind of line up headshots and such. But the mechanic, like, the things that game does that aren't done, like, if you play it as a run and gun, I imagine it probably feels like a shitty Siphon Filter knockoff, you know, and Siphon Filter was already a shitty Metal Gear knockoff. So, if you play it, even the one thing that was uncommon for that era is the kind of, like, approaches to objectives. So it has that Deus Ex bit where you can, you know, I want to, you know, I'm instead of clearing this courtyard, I'm going to hack a turret, or I'm going to pay a contact in another country to drop a sniper rifle on the roof across the street and things like that. So that's something I rarely saw, but I can't, if you're playing it like run and gunny, I can't speak to it because I haven't done it. And I think that's why a lot of the reviews kind of shit on it when it came out.
Gotcha. Okay.
Are you playing it? Is that a?
I have played through one and a half times.
Okay.
And I was more. I don't think I did any of the weapon upgrades. I did stealth upgrade all the way, and maybe the technician one. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean the stealth made it easy enough to just run around and choke people out all the time or stab them. So that's pretty much how I
play a game like that.
Well, I mean, we could save this for perhaps another discussion, but yeah, I mean, it is nice how you have the option of choking or stabbing, and that kind of reflects the style that you're going for.
You have two speeds, choke or stab. Okay, so are you fuckers happy? I just bought this game. It is shipping in 2 days. So
I'm super happy, man. Like you will love. So the same way that that kind of moral ambiguity you love in The Walking Dead,
uh-huh.
where you make, and I think that you were probably looking for The Witcher when you were building your PC, where like you make decisions and don't know if they're good decisions at the time you're making them. Like this does that well. It also does something that you pointed out when I was playing LA Noire, is that the kind of conversation based things are based on gauging what somebody would be interested in, mm-hmm. and what they're going to react to. And this game is 100% about that. Like there are encounters that are all entirely like tense conversations in public plazas with people where you have to gauge what kind of stances they're going to react to.
Hmm.
And there are gameplay consequences and benefits toward like for pissing people off, for making them fall in love with you, for making them like respect you, like regard that, you know, like there are consequences to every way you can make people react to you in this game.
That's the thing I especially liked about it, is that it was okay with you alienating people and making them really mad, and it rewarded you for that. So
yeah, because I mean, sometimes people are going to lose their cool if they're pissed off at you.
Yeah.
Or like one of my favorite things, you have the different handlers in the game. One of them, if you piss her off, your character is better because you're motivated to outshine her. You know, because like you guys are enemies. Like that's so cool. Like that doesn't happen in video games. You know.
Yeah.
And I just, it makes the game stand up. You know, I played through as the same kind of combat build, but did a lot of different decisions this time. And I was just like, okay, every single one of these handlers I'm going to have sex with. Like, I'm going to have sex with every woman in this game. And puzzling out, like, again, this makes it sound like I like Japanese dating sims or something. But, like, puzzling out, okay, this girl, you know, talked about how she was happy that I choked out the guards on this mission who were Marines rather than killing them. She probably respects a professional attitude and then would, like, manipulate. God, this makes me sound so pervy. Like, I swear I'm not like that about video games. This is just an example of one of the kind of interactions you have to game in the game. But, you know, I was like, okay, this person likes this. Let's act like that. And it was really rewarding when I'd read the person's personality right, you know.
Yeah.
Similar to LA Noire.
I was going to say, it's probably analogous to, like, trying to get a Heavy Rain achievement, though I can't think of one off the top of my head.
Good stuff.
Oh, you not getting caught would be one of them.
Yeah, so I mean that's mostly what I've been playing, other than stuff for Watch Out for Fireballs, which we'll talk about on that other show.
What's the name of it again?
Watch Out for Fireballs.
Oh, which is a very good show and should be highly recommended.
Who has a piano?
That's me playing the theme song to Watch Out for Fireballs. I was hoping that it would be subliminal to people listening to this.
Is Cole still alive, or did he start playing Alpha Protocol now?
No, I actually went to use the restroom, so I am so sorry. I didn't want to interrupt.
That's going to be interesting.
You
when you listen.
You can't
after.
Do this on the podcast with Gary. This is the only format that allows for that.
He does it all the time and Watch Out for Fireballs. I just don't notice because of my big mouth. I'm blathering on about nonsense. And
I am so sorry. So where I left you off was you were talking about how you wanted to have sex with every woman.
we were talking about how you need to invest in a jar. That kind of shit.
For like, peeing?
Like a podcast urine jar. Yeah, man. Get on it.
Like, I only drink recreationally when I'm podcasting. So it's like, it's really, really difficult for me to.
Yeah, that is a barrier.
Yeah. So it's, I mean, like, if I you know, if I don't like it, I'm only out $10, you know, all of that.
Yeah. I mean, so the one thing I'll say is similar to a lot of people did not like the first mission in Deus Ex is a big thing. This game is probably on the list of games that doesn't put its best foot forward.
Right.
So get through the training, get through the first hub. It's short.
Okay.
And then, and when replaying it, I found a lot to like about it. But the neat interaction between all the different players involved kind of just comes into play afterwards.
Neat.
Cool.
So Castle Crashers.
Cole's a game behind, still a game behind. I mean, I don't have that much to say about it. It's fun. I'm glad I bought it on sale. I would never play it alone. Right. I don't know if I'm going to play it again. So, but it is mildly fun. It's a nice change of pace. Like I have, you know, like this online buddy who we play, and we default to Left 4 Dead too if we can't find anything to play. So it's nice to have something else. But
I think there are games that truly are just enjoyable by their sheer function as a palate cleanser.
Yeah, like I would agree with that.
You kind of say, normally I would never go for this sort of thing, but just because it is a antithesis to what the typical thing that I've been playing right now, it fits in really well.
So...
Multiplayer.
So, yeah, multiplayer, because that's a reason why Gary was interested in coming on. We had a fairly interesting discussion on the Facebook page about loot in games that came from an entirely different discussion. I saw this as an opportunity for as I like to say, completely originally, synergy.
Did you make that up? Is that your word?
That is my word. It's from the Greek for shit becomes better when it's together.
Was that a Greek pop song or yeah.
Yes, it was ABBA. Yes, it was okay. Actually, no, it was the Greek knockoff of ABBA. No. So I put out a discussion topic for the multiplayer section, which two people responded to. Thank you so much. Which is basically loot in games. Turn on or turn off? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the two parties to the argument, why don't you kind of give some context from your points of view about where this came from?
Let me pause it real quick. What I mean by that, this is just, you know, a conclusion I'm coming to, but I want to make sure that I'm not, I don't want to conflate this with randomness in games. Like, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about very specific, like in a very specific subgenre of games that I would call the way that, so Diablo does loot. So like the Diablo Lite, it also happens in, Dungeon Defenders. So I'm talking about, Torchlights, Diablos, what I played of Borderlands 1, even though I'm by no means like an expert of that game. And I think I've come to the conclusion that the way that those games handle loot is bunko. Okay. And
say more.
Yep. So the cruxes of my argument is that one thing. So the idea, not only, so you are constantly, like you play a Torchlight, you are constantly finding stuff on a near constant basis. And if you, sometimes you're going to find things that are very minorly incrementally better than what you have now. So if you are, most people I know eventually just start ignoring loot. Like the games have systems built in to ignore that this happens, which to me is a bad sign. if you're equipping things that are, you know, this has 0.23 more fire damage than the sword I have now, you are making such like incremental increases to your character build that it kind of ruins one of the ways that items and rewards are supposed to work in games, right? Like you're supposed to feel more powerful and satisfied in the sense of growth. And it becomes this kind of thing where you are constantly marginally increasing. You never get that jump. Now you can argue that the games have, because it's random, you have that jump build in. So you can find a high level piece of equipment. But there are other systems in these games that kind of undermine that. So you it's not a lottery. Like if you're playing Torchlight and you find a really good piece of equipment, one, you have to luck out and have your character be able to use it. Two, they have level requirements. So it's not random. Like there's very serious constraints as to how much you're going to be able to advance in this. And the effect for me ends up being really boring, where my character is just gradually, and I'm just talking about equipment-wise, like I love skill trees, I love character builds, equipment-wise, I'm just gradually improving my stats, literally down most of the time to percentages of points as I'm playing. Or I'm ignoring that and just waiting for, you know, as big a jump as the game will allow me. And then what's the point of the system? Like, why am I constantly picking up, you know, picking up trash? Like, to me, an item, you know, you get an item in a game, it should be like a decision, you know, like the, and it should feel great. Like, I did this hard thing. I got this cool reward from it. And when I'm playing Torchlight, I will go through a very difficult dungeon. I get a chance at a cool reward that I have like a 3 out of 4 chance my character can't use. If they can use it, then they, you know, they have to be of adequate level for it. And most of the time it is not like a, it's not a serious jump. It's not a lot better than what I've done before. So I just feel like it kind of undermines a lot of the what I like about getting stuff in games, like what items mean to me.
I would say that that's a valid argument, but I would think that that's also an argument for like the second time you play through Borderlands 2, because that's kind of the game that I was comparing it to in my head. Because they do all the things that you're talking about, where the increases are usually a percentage or less, and there are level requirements on the weapons. But I mean, the nice thing is the first time you play it, you don't. I mean, I did not realize this, you know, or I did not really see the upgrade treadmill until I was about on my second playthrough. So I would say, yeah, those systems can definitely be bad. And I think that you don't notice those systems, though, until you play a game long enough, until well after that the storyline is done.
I think that discounts one fundamental thing, and that is progression feels good. Like, in general, you could argue against loot, and I definitely understand that if it's not giving you meaningful upgrades, you know, it can get a little superfluous. But in general, you know, that's why skill trees exist. Skill trees occupy that same kind of space where it really is percentage points better of the same thing, and it's really just kind of keeping you pace with the enemy or keeping your pace with the enemies. You know, I could make the same argument against skill trees and character progression in general that you're making right now against loot, I think.
There's
a difference between those things, though, right? So, like, skill trees you have control over. So you're making meaningful decisions in that. And you could say you're making meaningful decisions about what loot you're deciding to use, but you don't have control over what loot you get in that. And it's, you know, it's about progression there, but it's also about gameplay too. It's about, you know, rewarding you for doing something neat. So one, like, a skill tree is about decisions, and decision, making a decision is the most important part of playing a game. If you're not making decisions, you're not doing anything. The other bit is that progression in most other ways that it's handled is I feel, and this is, I don't have like evidence to back this up, but are bigger jumps than we're running into with this loot. So even in a Diablo, like, when you put another point into a skill tree or gain a new skill, it's going to be a bigger deal than finding another, you know, sash that is like increases my movement speed by half of a point.
I would like to offer an alternative view, or a way that a different game has handled loot. Knights of the Republic 1 and 2, but more specifically Knights of the Republic 1. The way that you could upgrade your items and get better things is by talking to different merchants. And the nice thing that they had is they would not do it based on your level. It was set in stone what each merchant had and how much it cost. So no matter how many times you play the game and no matter how differently you play the game, those things were constants. So the nice thing is upon repeated playthroughs, you know exactly where to go to get the best things. And that was kind of a milestone that you could look forward to. And that's something that I thought grew better with age as opposed to the other system, which kind of gets worse with age.
Huh. Okay, so this could very well be attributed to a character flaw on my part, which is how I begin most of my arguments. But it could be in how you approach it. Yes, I'm making an argument for subjectivity, which means that this is inherently a moot point. However, I'm the kind of person who, if I am playing, let's say, Diablo, or let's say Torchlight or World of Warcraft or any of those things, and I'm a fire mage, And, you know, I'm just kind of, you know, trugging along and I'm like, oh, awesome. I can shoot, you know, like fire tempests or whatever. And I'm going around and I'm presented with a level up and they say, oh, you have a new skill point. This is different than loot or whatever. I think the idea holds true and I'll get to that at the end. And so I have this one skill point. I can spend this on 3% better fire damage or the ability to throw ice spears. For me, I'm probably going to choose ice spears because that is a new toy. Even though objectively, it would be better for me to choose the 3% increase to fireballs because I am an experience chaser. And for me, even if it's just a difference in the polygons that show up on the screen, the particle effects, I'm going to go after the new toy. And that's a reason why, like, even though those weapons are objectively worse in Borderlands 2, I like the ones where when you reload, it throws a grenade.
Yeah.
You know,
if it changes. So bets are off when it changes the functionality of what you're doing.
Right.
Like I'm talking about iterative progress on the stuff you have now, like having a wide variety of tools to choose from. Like I'm not insane. Like I want that. That's wonderful, you know, and something I thought of when I was kind of formulating this argument in my head is like, I love Binding of Isaac. It's super random. The items you get are random, but each item changes the way you play.
Right.
Like there is no item that is, this is the same thing plus a little bit to what you're doing. Yeah. And if like you've got a gun in Borderlands that shoots a grenade when you reload and that's cool to you, I think it's cool too. And I would like that, but I don't want to wade through a sea of guns that don't do that.
Yeah.
Like in your fire like thing, posit like an idea as opposed to just like hoping you come across. So the skill point thing, but imagine it was like you wanted to go get a ring that gave you +3 fire percent damage. And so you're farming for that. Contrast that with like a, you know, an experience where like you go to, and I'm not saying it can, like, so this would be neat to me. Like you're a fire character. There's a side quest that is a volcano. And you know, if you go to get that, you are guaranteed to get a meaningful upgrade that you can use. At that point, it can be random. That's fine. But I want that instead of seas of clickables the entire time I'm kind of playing around and maybe chancing upon it.
Right. So like, sort of like
find a gray area.
Sort of like how Skyrim handled their loot with like the different guilds and getting things related to that field.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is the thing. You know, because you choose to ignore a piece of loot in a video game doesn't mean that you're wasting something like you are in real life. You know, like it's perfectly fine to look at 90% of the loot in a game and say that this is essentially a different form of cash. And that's one of the ideas I wanted to bring to the conversation is, you know, maybe one way to streamline it is just to have a take as cash option.
This can be mechanically mitigated. Like this is something that Torchlight does where you can have your pet go to town and sell stuff so you don't have to use a scroll to go back like you would in Diablo.
Yeah, but at the same time, having that kind of crap, not interested, crap makes that, ooh, look at this, you know, that much better.
Whereas, it's dude shopping.
Yeah. And it's almost like, you know, like you said, if you're promised a reward at the end of this quest and you know, it could be random, but you know, that's when you're going to get something nice. Okay. You know, great. You can go to the quest. And you kind of have that one goal in mind and you know, it's coming, you know, when it's going to hit and hopefully it's as good as you think, but there's no element of surprise or delight there. Whereas if the loot is balanced well, you know, you'll kind of be constantly presented with mediocre options, and every once in a while that rare level reward pops up, and it, you know, it's structured so that you're not expecting it, which it sounds like we might have different opinions. For me, that's a good thing. I want to be surprised with when that good stuff comes along versus having a, here's the fixed point where I get the grenade launcher and here's the fixed point where I get the, you know, the ice spears, since we're running with that, you know.
What that does for me though is that one, like I think that the level like requirement mechanic undermines that. So it's two competing mechanics in the game. You know, if the fact that I can luck upon something and the class requirement, so the fact that I can hit that jackpot and have it be something I can't use yet, like, or can't use for 10 levels or 30 skill points or ever in this class, like, yeah. You know, undermines that to me. The other thing being is that it doesn't necessarily make the doesn't make the game unfun or anything. Like, I, you know, I love Torchlight. I love, you know, there are games I really like about this, but it turns the experience into like something that is less designed and more of just like a slot machine designed to pay out at regular intervals. And that to me is not like good design. Like, it's a weird, it's much more arcadey than I think that those games are actually thought of as, because it doesn't require very much on your part, you know, the loot section, the loot part of it. You know, like, you're choosing what weapon you want to use, which is fine. But once you, and you can make that choice in any video game, like, that's always a thing you can do. And then once you've made that choice, the times you level that up, the amount that you level it up is entirely out of your hands, and it takes a choice away from you. Like, you're just pulling a slot machine while simultaneously micromanaging like crazy. Because that pet system in Torchlight 2, like, it's kind of a pain in the ass to load your pet up with stuff and be without like a powerful ally for a couple minutes, because, you know, because you're handling the games the way it handles currency, essentially. You know?
Yeah.
It's, you know, and then when I think about it, like, so it has that pet thing, which is a huge innovation and a big improvement. Before that, like, when you're playing Diablo, the rhythms of the game are based on making trips to and from the shop. Mm-hmm. Like, it is a game about selling things. You know, like, you, like, literally how far you're out, how long you're out is, like, when your inventory gets full. And that's what it is. It becomes, like, a real grind. Like, they're very MMO-esque experiences, which, like, to me, and this, you know, mileage can vary there as well, but to me, that's like, it, you know, I think I called on the Facebook, like, a good action RPG with progress quest attached to it. Mm-hmm. And that's what it reminds me of.
Hmm. I think a point of commonality is that level caps are BS. Like, if you're going to say it's random, then it should be truly random. And if you get a weapon that is game-breakingly awesome, you know, like, I want to enjoy that. To me, that would be fun to have and be like, oh my gosh, I can just breeze through.
Yeah, I can't believe I got the flame, you know, the flame sword plus 20. That's amazing. You know,
ice spears.
So yeah. Dennis,
yes, I wanted those.
Dennis, have you played Borderlands 2 with somebody who's like way lower level with you than you then?
Not like ridiculously lower level, but yes, I have. Yeah,
because I will say that that does make the game just ceases to be fun, because you just one-shot everything. And so
it
turns an experience into waiting for scripting to happen. So yeah.
So maybe then it's you should never get a weapon that you can't use. And then you just need to rein in the randomness so that you can still get things that are overpowered, but not to the point that it makes the game boring.
And that's a problem with the dice roll. That's the problem of the way that they laid it out. Just like any kind of like matchmaking problem or any kind of heuristic or algorithm that the system puts forth to like give you this stuff to dole out things. Because even if it's entirely randomized and the developer assumes that it's so, you are making this thread, this, you know, one thing after another that, you know, can completely ruin an experience. If you get like, shit, I'm a sorcerer, why do I have all these broadswords given to me in a row? This game sucks. And then you quit.
Mm. Yeah, class requirements are also another hard thing, which is nice about, I know Borderlands does it. I think I remember hearing about, I want to say it was like Sony's, the agency, which may have never even gotten off the ground, where really it's entirely the equipment that you have that determine your class, so that you can choose your class in terms of some basic perks that you will get, but it does not shut off any loot options to you, which I think is cool.
Yeah.
And the right way to do it.
Go ahead, Gary, and then we're going to do some listener stuff.
Okay, yeah. But one of the things, when you talk about this being a solvable problem, this is an old genre of games. And I think that, like, it's not – and I realize I'm the outlier here because they're very popular games, so people obviously like this part of it. But it hasn't been fixed. So it's not something that somebody, I feel like, has done really well. And I haven't played Borderlands 2. I played the first one and got – you know, I was fine. Like, the loot, I don't remember bothering me, but I got bored with hunting down 10 – what are the things called? Like Gruxels or Grimacules or...
Oh, Skags?
Skags. So many Skags. it was Skags a-poppin'. So I ended up getting bored with all the Skags. But the... you know, it just hasn't been done in a way that I feel like is designed and stuff like that. And it kind of like makes that part of the game... still, it feels like a PopCap, you know, progress quest, bejeweled kind of thing, as opposed to like something that's more intentional and designed to me.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
Let's hear what you guys think.
We've had a lot of fun here today, but really what this segment is all about is your opinion. No, so Murph Murphy.
I love that name.
God, it, like I was about to say, the title holds over the best name of any fan of any show in the entire world. So the question
you weren't expecting to find me here, were you, Murph? I followed you here from Watch Out for Fireballs.
Yeah. So again, you know, the question was, you know, loot in a game, turn on or turn off, and Murph says off. Well, random loot. I'm of the mindset that rarity as a balance mechanism isn't actually a balance mechanism. Either you have to make fights too hard to do without the loot, or make it too easy to do with the random loot. Either way, as a player, I'm missing out. Also, this kind of thing leads to grinding, which is a bad mechanic. I know Korea loves it, but sorry, they're wrong, which is the second cheap shot that we have taken at Korea in this episode. He goes on to say, now, correctly balanced, non-random loot can hit my endorphin response just right, especially if it introduces new fun mechanics. See any awesomely implemented grappling hook, except for Toma, which doesn't call that's a blind alley. But this is harder said than done. Easier said than done, I think he meant to say. I'm going to correct you on the fly. He goes on to say, I think Infamous 2 does this about right, but not totally. Borderlands 2, as much as I like the gameplay, is probably one of the worst loot implementations I've seen in a long while. Not counting WoW, of course. That drop system is just awful. There are no WoW apologists here, but I kind of winced for you at the Borderlands 2 jab, Dennis.
Yeah, I'm about to go. No.
Stop listening forever.
Yeah,
that's such a good name. Don't chase him away.
It's the one thing keeping you alive. I actually really like the point he makes about randomness. That to say it another way, almost difficulty should not be randomized. It is the approach that should be randomized. So getting loot should not necessarily affect how difficult the game is, but should affect the way you approach the game. And in that aspect, I would say Borderlands does very, very well. Just one example, I got a randomly generated shield that was just, you know, in terms of being a shield, it was kind of crappy, but it gave these huge bonuses to damage when they were down. And so I actually went and completely respec'd my character and my weapon loadout around this one piece of loot to get a bunch of powerful close range weapons and to give myself a bunch of kind of damage bonus perks in my skill tree. And then my complete strategy changed from being kind of a sniper to just dash in and Rambo things and not be worried about my shield, because I knew the second it went down, I was going to become this just amazing tank.
See, that kind of bugs me, because your enjoyment of that depends on you having access to that vocabulary. And that can be, you know, part of the enjoyment and part of, you know, the randomness. Like, this is the game presenting you with a new way to play that you wouldn't have found before if you hadn't gotten these particular rolls of the dice. It's just weird, because I'm of the mind that if something is entirely random, then it's hard to count that as something intentional, you know?
But that's it.
Go ahead. I was going to say just one thing that sounds like about Borderlands 2, and not to be a Borderlands 2 apologist, because I feel like we probably have some of that here. But one thing it sounds like, just from hearing you guys talk about it, is it sounds like it does a good job of matching functionality with different weapons, so they're not primarily, you know, incremental stat things. So, like, if there's a gun that shoots grenades when you reload it, if there's this shield that has, like, a mechanical change, I find that a lot less egregious than I do things that are just mild upgrades to things you have now. So that at least sounds like I could see why that would be neat to find that shield. And the challenge of building your skills around it and everything, I can see why that is fun.
Yeah.
I think that's definitely a point of commonality, is, like you said, Cole, making a choice, you know, making a decision and having that decision be meaningful are what games are all about. And to the extent that randomized loot can enable that, it's awesome. And to the extent that it's really just a way to keep your character paced with the damage numbers that the game thinks you should be doing at this level, you know, kind of BS.
Speaking of points of commonality, I want to bring up something, which is at least in Borderlands and these kind of games, there's a chance that there will be something that drops. You know, I've been thinking about where I was about a year ago at this time, in my own personal life and in my gaming life. And around this time, I was playing Final Fantasy XII. And in thinking about this loot discussion, I have to say, like, Final Fantasy, like, they done fall off, like, as regards, like, Final Fantasy IV and beyond, as regards, you know, 1 in 256 drops, you know?
Hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So there's the loot that's like, hey, you know, 2% bonus in this. And then there's, like, hey, maybe 1/5 of a percent of a chance of a time you will possibly get this ultimate weapon. Have fun.
Well, that if you don't grind for it, it kind of becomes what we're talking about. It becomes like kind of an ideal where it becomes this thing that may not happen, and if it does, you feel amazing.
Yeah.
Just the problem is don't grind for that shit. You know, like that's the issue. Just I was talking about this with one of my friends, and he was talking about how a lot of these kind of loot things, part of the level requirements is a multiplayer control. So, like, you know, you don't if there weren't level caps, like somebody you can multiplayer with could just drop end game equipment for you. But in general terms, like, I'm not a fan of mechanics that stop you from ruining the game for yourself. Like, I think you should have the wherewithal just not to spoil the experience. You know, the same thing when people talk about you know, random loot as a thing where it's like, oh, it's you know, I don't want to just be able to check the wiki for this. And it's like, I kind of get that, but also, like, if you don't want to check the wiki, don't check the wiki.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
It's kind of, you know, just don't ruin it for yourself if you think that would ruin it for you. Yeah. You know? Yeah.
But maybe the question behind the question is it okay to have things that you might not experience in games where you can't control whether or not you experience it? So, you know, the whole idea of grinding this 256 whatever to one odd thing is I know it's in there and I have to experience it, or I want it bad enough that I really want to experience it. Is it okay that there are things that I'm just going to miss because they're randomly generated and I can't control whether or not I get them?
To be fair, there are some items in these games where it's a 1 in 256 chance that you encounter the enemy, and then also a 1 in 256 chance that they will drop it. So, Ben, I know that strikes you. That squares it, right?
So it's 1 in 2 to the 16th power. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a big number.
Yeah. So it's
less than a million, though. It's less than 1 in 1 million.
So you're saying I've got a chance.
Yeah.
So, Lanky Sam on Twitter, you sent me this 3-tweet blast, which says turn off. It mostly makes me think of the extra credits episode of on the Skinner box. I have no idea what that is.
Yeah, what are you talking about? Do you have a stroke? I know what those words mean separately, but they make no sense together.
Like, I know what a Skinner box is. Like it's something that, like, he got in a lot of trouble for, but he didn't actually do. But, you know, he didn't actually keep his kids in that box. It was just a picture of them playing in it. But going on, BF Skinner. Falsely accused. Anyway,
social justice hour on the level.
He says it holds attention, but isn't fun. It isn't fun or enriching. It's a condensed form of the vacuous time wasting that video games once had PR problems with. We're better than that now. Also, the EC extra credits on calculations versus decisions. I'm with Gary. Making choices is gaming strength. Comparing item stats is not. And that goes back to dude shopping, in my opinion, which is, does this pair of pants, you know, not look good on me, but does it give me a better bonus to my ice spears?
Yeah. Well, you run into that a lot in Dark Souls too, you know, but it's not randomized, so you can, you know, you are kind of making some of those decisions in Dark Souls as well.
The equipment set is so limited in Dark Souls.
Yeah, well, and also it doesn't do very much. So, like, if somebody, I was thinking about that in that, you know, people dropping high level stuff, and it's like, if somebody dropped, you know, end game equipment for me in Dark Souls, like, and I just started Dark Souls, I would still die all the time,
right?
You know, like, they ameliorate the importance of equipment, so it kind of and it helps with that.
And it's so stat gated too. Like, you know, if you had the endurance or the strength to wear Havel's equipment, the dude with the big floppy sword, the dildo knight,
it's a dragon's tooth. It's a giant club, actually.
It is, but like it flops around when he hits you. It's like crazy upsetting.
I don't want to play Dark Souls anymore.
No. But like, you know, if you wore those, like, I don't think anything, even in the Artorias, even in the Prepare to Die, like, you know, downloadable content, nothing trumps that. But you just have to be so, so strong to wear it. And, you know, just it's this weird thing. It's almost a WoW mentality where there are sets, right? Mm-hmm. Like when you kill a certain enemy, you have a chance of getting a piece of their armor. And there are NPCs where you can get every piece of their armor just by killing them, right?
Right. But I mean, it doesn't have that big of an impact in the game for the most part. Like if you don't want to do Havel set, you can do the giant set or the stone set, and they're fairly, you know, they're similar.
Yeah,
you know, you're just choosing heavy, medium, or light, more or less.
But I would say, I mean, just and this is me geeking out, that like after a certain point, like especially in a second playthrough, it becomes a game where like marginal gains are really, really important.
Mm.
But that gets into like, will 2% extra fireball damage make me better at this game? And so I flip sides. No. Dark Souls will make a man do weird things. Yeah. So Lanky Sam, aside from his weird accusations against BF Skinner,
we said it's the BF Skinner Extra Credits, which makes me think Extra Credits is some kind of web show or podcast.
Yeah, that's
and there's one about that's entitled that or about it.
Yeah, or you know,
one. To the Google.
to Google. It'll be in the show notes, I'm sure. But yeah, I mean, just he makes a point about video games being about time wasting, and you know, like, can this stuff be a way to extend the length that you spend looking at a screen?
Yeah, probably. And
anytime you're farming for something, So, and then we can all agree that like grinding and farming sucks, right? Like, we're all friends here. It can be vaguely satisfying, but it's not good design,
right?
Like, yeah,
it's never good design. It could, you know, so. Yeah.
So let's go into the deliberation chamber. Oh, fuck. So anyway. So we've reached no consensus.
I think the response, at least community response, was pretty straightforward.
Yeah, but both of the people who responded were very much in opposition to the idea of like random loot. And you know, like my idea when I put this out was like the emphasis on loot, like how much of this, because there's very much a class of games that's all about like that's all about this. You know, mm-hmm. like Gary said, like we said at the very beginning, the Diablo light / Diablo like class of games where this is put forward. I mean, I remember in the marketing materials for Borderlands, even before they had the cel shaded art style, they were talking about this will have millions upon millions of guns.
Yeah, I think Borderlands 2 was bazillions of guns, just got bazillion deer.
Yes. Yep. That was the tagline for that,
which is really hard to say. Actually,
it was quite ill informed of them.
Math is hard.
The end boss. Now it's time for the end boss, where we talk about what's on our mind. Can I start?
Sure.
So, after getting approval from Gary's friend and my acquaintance, Nick, I think that I know what kind of PC I want to make.
Ooh.
Oh, all right.
Yeah. I'm not quite sure why, but I have some kind of, call of the wild. I don't know. Something makes me think that I want to make a PC that will be spec'd to The Witcher 2. Not because I especially want to play The Witcher 2, but there's a certain subset of games that are Windows only, and the MacBook Pro that I'm using to Skype you guys in to this, will not cut it anymore. And if I can spec it to the, you know, one of the most advanced PC games that's available now, it will last me for a while. So I have gotten the cost down to about $720 to put a price amount on it. And over the course of the next month, with Christmas and everything coming up and with some money that I've had coming in, I am thinking about pulling the trigger. In fact, I was at Micro Center today looking at processors. For as shitty as Micro Center is, they have good prices on Intel processors.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah,
very so, awesome. Welcome to the winning team.
Well, it's one
Gary's,
of those,
Gary's channeling Money Smith right now.
It's okay. So it's one of those things. For day-to-day use, for like my ability to work and to do the job that I want to do, which is by day being a video producer for a web marketing company, and by night playing video games and recording podcasts and editing podcasts, like a MacBook Air will do, you know, or, you know, a 13-inch MacBook Pro or something like that. And when I was budgeting this stuff out a year in advance, because I'm fucking psychotic, I didn't take into account that my workplace would offer equipment incentives where they would say like, hey, we'll give you a couple thousand dollars for equipment. And so it's kind of like, okay, well, I can get a PC with that. That would be like enough for me to do what I want to do with my day-to-day work computer, which would be a MacBook Air or a MacBook Pro. And so this money that I had earmarked, I can put this towards, you know, something that will play games that I wouldn't otherwise be able to play. And so this is helping me justify spending, you know, $700 on something that, honestly, the majority of the games I could probably play on a console.
The golf is really narrowed on both ends of the spectrum between like PCs and Macs. Like,
yeah,
used to be that, you know, unless you wanted to play, you know, marathon, like Macs were dead air, you know, dead air for games.
Yeah.
And PCs could not run editing software or do serious work. And now both of those things are only barely true.
Right.
So the, you know, the same way that you can, you know, play a lot of PC games on console or on a Mac, or a lot of video games, you can also do a lot of like editing and everything like that on Windows, and it's fine. Mm-hmm. You know, like that golf has been closed quite a bit.
Right.
But it's still, I mean, there's still things that are there. If there are games you want to play on PC that you can't play, or if it's a pain in the ass for you to do it now, right, like it's, that's not a bad price, and that will last you a long time.
Right. And so, you know, that's the way I look at it. If I spec it against the recommended, you know, again, using Witcher 2 as some kind of, you know, perverse benchmark, you know, just kind of like, mm-hmm, if I do the recommended specs for that, this will continue to be useful for games that come out for the next 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like yeah, that is my, that like, that's my timeline for this stuff to be useful. And, you know, that isn't much to spend, especially when I'm not buying consoles or, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So that is something that I'm considering, you know, putting money away for over the next month and a half or so.
You have our blessing. Nice. Yeah, the siren is to affirm your decision.
Don't be alarmed by the siren.
I live in scary Portland, Oregon, where there are constantly murders across the street from my house.
It's actually a beautiful city.
Oh, it's a great city. Loved it so much.
I'm going to be back there, actually, Gary, in either January or February.
Holy shit. Why am I just now? That's awesome.
Yeah.
For work?
For work, yeah.
Yeah, let's hang the fuck out, dude.
Yeah, let's do that.
Let's do it up. Let's paint the town. Yeah. There's stuff. We spent so much time working when you visited. Like, yeah. Well, I'm sure we'll record something, yeah, like while you're out in some way, shape, or form. But let's, uh-huh, yeah, let's hang out. It'll, yeah, be awesome.
Yeah.
By the way, I can say on good authority, and Gary, tell me if you think this is accurate, but Cole, I think you would really like the Eastburn.
The Eastburn?
It's a bar. I thought it was, maybe I had a bad idea where you lived, but it's a bar that's in Portland that me and Jen went to. That was just like really, really cool. They had a whole bunch of microbrews, which I guess is everywhere in Portland. But it was $2 beer night, so $2 pint night, for like all the nice stuff. The seats, a lot of them were like swings and hammocks and stuff, which was probably a bad idea for drunk people.
But, correction, awesome idea. Drunk people.
Oh no, I fell over.
Yeah.
Great. This is fun because I'm drunk. If I'd been sober and fallen over, it would have sucked.
Yeah. But it's like it's still more of a chill atmosphere. The wait staff was incredibly nice. And just overall, it was a really good time. So if you get out that way, and Gary, if you haven't been there yet, then I can recommend it.
No, I definitely haven't. My beer intake is very limited now, but I've been looking for somebody to adventure with because I just realized that like Portland's kind of a famous beer town, but I also realized we have a lot of local distilleries.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Like, man, let's go drink some hard liquor that was made in the same room that we're in. You know? Like, well, I'm into it. Like, I'm nerdy enough to where, like, I'm kind of looking for somebody to, like, let's go find out how bourbon is made and then drink it until we can't feel.
So, that's good.
Yeah.
Awesome.
That's great news.
And bosses.
I'll do mine just real quick. The whole professional gaming circuit gets a really bad rap, and overall, I agree. There's
rightfully so.
Yeah, that's mostly really well deserved. However, this past weekend, they had some pro gaming event going on IGN, and I watched the first person shooter event and the fighting game event. And I have to say, it was actually kind of cool. Like the what do they call them, shoutcasters or whatever,
mm-hmm.
which is traditionally just the worst thing, but the two guys doing the first person shooter events were actually really good.
What game
and
was
it? Was just Shoot Mania.
I've only
ever heard of it in context of like the pro gaming circuit. But it's like this mode where you have, you know, two teams of three people. The and you do one attacker from one team and then three people from the other team defending, and the attacker has basically a laser which has, you know, infinite range, is fires instantly, though it has a slight recharge time, and it's like a one hit kill, whereas the defending team have rockets which travel slower, and it takes three of them to kill, and the one attacker needs to either kill all three defenders or capture a checkpoint by, you know, staying on it for a certain period of time within a certain time limit. And so it's kind of this really intense, almost juggernaut situation where it's one versus three, and the one has kind of got an overpowered weapon, but he's also outnumbered, and he is, you know, the onus is on him to get to the goal or to kill everyone. Whereas the defenders, while weaker, outnumber them and can just kind of sit back and defend and wait for time to run out on the other guy. And it was kind of like really intuitive to just watch and get kind of the strategies of what was going on. And was, you know, is as enjoyable to watch for me as any of the sporting events that are on TV. So, like I said, I know, you know, pro gaming has just a really, really bad rap in general, but that specific instance was kind of fun.
Yeah, I have a weakness for that stuff. I think that mostly it's kind of repugnant, but I had but there was a summer where I would watch professional Left 4 Dead with commentary, like all summer. Like I spent an entire summer watching it, and it was kind of awesome. Like it helped me understand sports. Like I'm not a sports guy, but it's really satisfying when you, it was the same thing that happened when I got into roller derby. Like when you start understanding why people are doing things is when something can become fun.
Yeah.
And, So I've definitely had that experience. I like, you know, I kind of like, if I like the game, I kind of like watching people play it, you know, if I can follow it. So you know, I haven't gotten into like Dota or anything, but.
No, I don't think I could do that.
No.
So does the sports mentality hold up if you don't have a regional team to root for?
I found so. Like that's definitely an element, but like when I was watching the Left 4 Dead things, I would end up picking, you know, somebody would do something neat or somebody would have a funny name and I would just kind of arbitrarily pick that.
Yeah.
And it just kind of, you know, it's kind of worked. Like there's a professional Left 4 Dead player whose tag is BRB Bowflexin. And I think that's really hilarious. Like, be right back. I'm Bowflexin. I think that's hilarious. So anytime he's playing, it's like I'm on board with that team. Bowflexin is on it.
Like for the, I also much less because I didn't like the shoutcasters, but the fighting games, one, also, again, just watching people who have mastered something is always fun.
Yeah.
But you kind of tell there were some of the gamers were like these up and coming no names you could really root for. And then there was one guy, I think it was like Jason Wong or something like that, who was just very clearly like the villain of the group and would just abuse, parts of the game and didn't have any finesse, but would just kind of find ways to abuse characters to win, and everyone hated him. And the shoutcasters were very clear about that, which I thought was really unprofessional. But so yeah, you can do that. And the other thing was, I think that's what this weekend did, is it kind of bridged the connection for me. Is like, I can watch a first person shooter thing and say like, oh my gosh, the defender is playing up, which is a really risky move. In the same way that I can watch, football and say, oh, look, he's coming up to blitz. That's a really risky move, Mm-hmm. Like, it has that same level of depth to it. And that was kind of cool.
So
there's a really good documentary about competitive Street Fighter that I watched at PAX called I Got Next that I recommend. And it gets into the personalities. And I almost feel like Jason Wong, I don't know the names because I haven't watched a lot of competitive fighting games, but might be the guy from it. And he's kind of a villain in it. And it works the same way as King of Kong, where like it's a human story, and that's why it's good.
It's called I Got Next. Okay, I'll listen. Yeah.
So these professional sports gaming events, so these shoutcasters are like the play-by-play color commentators?
Mm-hmm.
What are these people with no qualifications doing, thinking that they can talk over the internet and that people will be interested in?
Yeah. How dare they?
Just these fuckers.
Those handsome fuckers.
these handsome dashing fuckers.
The only thing that would be worse is if they just talked without anything to commentate on and then expected people to actually like go and download it and listen to it.
Mm-hmm. Or participate in it.
Those brilliant devils.
These brilliant, handsome, sexy devils. Sorry.
Well, I didn't feel that way.
Yeah.
Well.
I can kind of bridge the gap on that as a subject. So I've kind of recently become enamored of video game related internet kind of like infotainment YouTubes. Primarily kind of king. Yeah, Crontendo being king of the castle, and a new episode of Cron Sega has come out. So I greatly enjoyed that. I don't know, Dennis and Ben, are you guys familiar with Crontendo at all?
Nope.
It's a gentleman named Dr. Sparkle, who he kind of sounds like Ben Stein in Ferris Bueller. Like, he's got a real monotone voice. He's got a real weird sense of humor, and he's playing every single, like, essentially almost like home console game in order. Like, he has a series for Crontendo, which is every Famicom game in order. And he started one for Sega and one for TurboGrafx-16. And the Crontendo one, I think, is on episode like 46 or something like that. And they're between an hour and 2 hours long. Like, it's a lot. Like, there are a lot of Mahjong games that come out. Like, there's a lot of chaff. But he's just playing each one and talking about it. And they're awesome. Like, I started off kind of like, why do I like this? This guy has a monotone voice, and it's not like he makes tons of funny jokes or anything. And then eventually I'm like, you know what? That's kind of a funny joke. And then eventually I'm like, this is fucking hilarious. Like, this guy's really funny. And the whole idea that this is even going on is really funny. And his weird, like, NPR-ish reactions to coming across another, like, Famicom baseball game is really funny. And gives you tons of context. Like, if you are interested in the way video games have evolved, like, this series, watch an episode before bed, like, a few times a week for a while, and you'll get this idea of, like, oh, so this is the first, I always thought Legend of Zelda did this, but, whoa, there's this weird, obscure Famicom game that did this really neat thing first, or, Dragon Quest has come out, so now every company in the world is making a Dragon Quest game. Like, you get to see, like, the macro view of gaming history and trends and everything like that very slowly. Mm-hmm. And it's really cool. And the Cron Sega, the big thing about this new one that came out, it was really hotly anticipated and everything, was because it bridges the gap and starts doing Genesis games.
Right.
So that's really cool because it's a system I don't have tons of experience with. Like, there are a few, like a handful of games I really love. But I'm going to see a lot of neat, obscure Genesis games, probably some gems I would never have checked out otherwise. So.
Very cool. Neat. Ben.
So my end boss kind of carried over from last week. I just found out that I got a job offer while we were podcasting.
What?
So, hey! Congratulations, man.
Yeah.
Congrats.
So we'll see what happens.
Fantastic. See?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Hold on one moment, Ben. I had to take a second to figure this out.
Yeah.
I am so happy for you, Ben.
Yeah, congrats, man.
Yeah.
I'm usually pretty stoic about things like this, so I'll probably be happy on the inside.
Yeah. But yeah, no. Yeah.
What he's not telling you is he wet his pants. So.
So credits. You know, like we said at the top of this episode, this is kind of a momentous time for the network, for the show, for all of this kind of stuff. So we'll go through the normal homework stuff, and we're going to try not to be, you know, we're going to try not to belabor it too much. But if you are of the iTunes persuasion, you know, your ratings and reviews and subscriptions and all of that will be incredibly valuable to us. You know, we're charting intermittently, and we are currently on the, you know, new and noteworthy, which is a very nice spot to be in when you are new and potentially noteworthy. So go in there and rate us and review us and those kind of things. It's very useful. But, you know, for the longevity, if you're not that kind of person, you can tell a friend. You know, that's a basic thing. You can participate in the Facebook group. That's facebook.com/thelevelpodcast. You can watch, you know, the various Twitters that we have around the network, my Twitter, which we will say at the end, where we put out conversation prompts, you know, to respond to that. Go ahead.
There's one thing I wanted to say. Shout out to Jeffrey Lalton was the name of the person who kept us honest with Ass Creed Trey instead of Assassin's Creed.
Yes.
Yeah. Geolaw. He's representing. Thank you, Gio Law.
The most boring college major that ever was.
If you would like to financially support the network, you can go to amazon.com/tipjar. There is an Amazon link there as you are doing your holiday/Christmas shopping or whatever you would like to do, or just in general. It doesn't have to be holiday or oriented. I don't really care. You can use that link, add stuff to your cart after you use that link, and we get a kickback from that for the past couple of months has helped make this hobby of ours not cost money, which is really, really cool, and we appreciate that. Yeah. Is there anything that I'm missing, fellas? We can do the Twitter stuff at the end.
Thanks to Watch Out for Fireballs.
Yeah. There is other stuff on the network that you can listen to as far as video game content goes. The podcast that Gary and I do is called Watch Out for Fireballs. It is a retro video games book club. If you like Gary, you can listen to the podcast that he does with his friend
Brayton Cameron.
Listen to The Pitch. It's really, really fucking funny, even though this week he made fun of productivity stuff.
Yeah, it's a 15 minute long insult against Cole.
I think that the turn of phrase that you used was people who forgot how to make lists.
Yes. So what can I find some things to help me to make lists?
Yeah.
So it's the task mask. And yeah. If you want to learn about the Task Mask, it is a product pitch podcast. We have the Bun Shine. We got a bunch Menvelopes. Of stuff coming up. Yeah, Menvelopes. We got the Sandman. What is it? Sandman Happy Nap Sleep Attack System is coming up. We're gonna record this week. Teeth for Brushers Magazine. So we are bursting with wonderful ideas. Check out that podcast.
At 15 minutes long is the closest to a bite-sized thing we have on this network. Yeah. If you like my flavor, and if you like hear me be if you like to hear me being like dressed down and diminished and just utterly buffeted by the winds of hatred,
isn't any of the shows. It's not even on the pitch, and I'm still
But on a more cosmic level, you can listen to Those Damn Ross Kids, which is pretty much 40 minutes of Chris just dressing me down, my brother Chris. So, and also there's Gary's show, Dead Idea Valhalla, which is in reruns, but you know.
Well, I'm going to record some new stuff that really gives it to you.
Awesome.
So I haven't done it yet.
gives it to me.
Yeah, most of when I was recording that, I didn't know you, so I can probably edit in some jabs.
So we can agree that meeting Cole is a life changing experience, which will immediately bias you against Cole. There we go. I'm going to take another drink. Okay.
It apparently retroactively biases you against Cole.
Like Back to the Future. Like, I'm going to go back in time and insult Cole and try to have sex with my mom. As a callback, I don't actually want to sex with my mom.
Don't mix those two things up.
So, anywho, my name is Cole Ross, and I am at Cole Ross on Twitter. That's KOLERoss.
Dennis Furia at DFURIA.
Does Benjamin always go last for this
yes.
as well?
Yes, he does.
Gary Butterfield. I'm at WOFF Podcast, WOFF Podcast on Twitter.
And I'm Ben Merkel, and I'm at Merkelizer on Twitter.
It's because you have the best Twitter name that you have to go last.
And he also tweets the least.
Is that also your iTunes name, too? You have a good iTunes name, if I recall.
It might be. I'm particularly proud of my PS3 name. It's Merkill, and I like that one.
I think it's Merkiller I saw that, and I was like, oh, I bet that Ben. That's Ben. That's awesome.
Awesome. So we hope you have had as much fun as we have, and we will see you next week. I burned my sweet potato fries and I was very upset.
Oh no.
Oh, yeah, this is gonna smell funny.
Yeah.
You guys lead really hard lives.
Yeah.
I think they turned out okay. I spiced them with enough cumin that the taste was salvaged. It just kind of tasted like caramelized sweet potatoes.
That sounds like a perk.
A little bit. I like burnt flavors. I hate the smell of burnt popcorn, but I kind of like the taste. Not like blackened.
God.
Like an icy bass.
Yeah. This isn't Metallica popcorn. This is, you know, it's like, no, oh.
Rolling Stones popcorn?
that was the worst merchandising they did in their career.
Rolling Stones ran popcorn.
What was that? What was that movie that they put out that they, Cocksucker Blues. That was like that was them. It was like a tour video, but they filed an injunction against the director, and now it can't be shown unless one of them is present.
No way.
Yeah. That's a thing.
Incredible.
Okay, I just said that's a thing. I need to look that up.
Yeah. Are you sure it's you had, Cole? Yeah.
That sounds about right, though.
You know, sometimes I think up a phrase and then I try to make something that justifies it. Okay, Cocksucker Blues is an unreleased documentary film directed by the noted still photographer Robert Frank, chronicling the Rolling Stones' North American tour in 1972 in support of the album Exile on Main Street. Fate. The film came under a court order which forbade it from being shown unless the director Robert Frank was physically present. Okay, so unless the director was present.
That changes the flavor a lot, because when you first said that, it made it sound like the ultimate holy grail to Rolling Stones fans. But if a member of the band had to be there, it would think about what ghastly things are present. That, like, you know, Keith Richards has to be there telling you that he is embarrassed to be, you know, to have done those things. Like, it's, you know, there's no musical footage. It's just them killing prostitute after prostitute like all across America.
It's like the Simpsons Super Bowl episode where there was no football.
Yeah.
Do you guys want to get started?
Let's do it.
Well, yeah. Okay. So I feel bad because I didn't make a formal introduction. Everybody knows who each other is by voice, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah. Hi, guys.
Hey.
Thanks for having me.
And we all have the names underneath the Skype, so that helps.
That's true.
That's how I remember you guys' names.
Who's Ben?
as Power as Power Man 5000 said, this is what it's like when worlds collide.
I forgot that existed. Thanks for that.
Somebody needs to play more Dreamcast, right? Like wasn't that or no? Tony Hawk.
That was Tony Hawk. That was right up there with Dragula. Not in terms of overused songs, but songs that were objectively bad, but were like blood pumping in the or heart pounding or one of those it'll blow you away kind of songs in a video game context. Yeah.
Yeah. Like it's got enough for like a 30-second clip of goodness.
Yeah. And then it loops on Tony Hawk.
Yep. That's the problem with the, my biggest problem with that remake is that the soundtrack seems like a lot more limited. So it's fewer songs and they have some of the same ones that I want, including Worlds Collide. But the, and then I think, oh, you know, I didn't actually miss listening to Power Man 5000. I just thought I did.
Really all they needed in there was Goldfinger. Did they have the Bad Religion song in the remake?
No.
Fucking shit.
Or the Dead Kennedy song.
Really? No Police Struck?
Yeah.
Those sons of bitches.
Yep.
Bumpuses.
I think they have that Goldfinger. Which one is the Goldfinger song? I think that's in there.
Superman.
Yeah, that song is in there. That's awesome.
Yeah.
There's something about skating video games that turns me into somebody who likes ska. And I don't know what it is. what's going on? Why am I listening to this? I'm loving it.
God. Do they still have Rage Against the Machine?
Mm-mm. No. Mm. Goldfinger and below.
That's the cutoff.
Goldfinger is the high water mark.